I'm William.
I'm Dave.
Dave is my pastor.
Willie is a hospice chaplain.
And we've been friends for more than 20 years.
We've had thousands of conversations about things that matter and things that don't.
So now we're inviting you to join in.
Each week we pull a topic out of the hopper and talk about it.
This is the Hopper Podcast.
The Hopper Podcast is not professional advice, just two guys spitballing, so do your own research.
Hey, Dave, I know that you've got a good topic for us today, but before we start, I wanted to whet your appetite with a brain teaser.
Okay.
A puzzler. Okay.
A puzzler.
Okay. Let's see if you can think through this. So here's the story. A prison warden meets with 27 new prisoners when they arrive to the prison.
27. Okay.
And he tells them, you can meet today and plan a strategy, but after today, you're going to be, each of you, in isolated cells with no communication with one another whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, in this prison, there is a switch room that contains two light switches labeled A and B.
Okay.
Okay. And each of them can be either in the on or off position. Both switches are in the off position now.
Right.
And they're not connected to anything. It's not, you're not okay. turning anything on or off. They're just okay. like, you know, there's.
It's just a switch.
Just, there's switches that are unconnected to anything. Okay.
Uh-huh.
After today, from time to time, when I am so inclined, I'm going to select one of you 27 prisoners at random and escort him to the switch room. And that prisoner will have to select one of the two switches and reverse its position. He has to move one, but only one of the switches. He can't move both, but he has to move one.
Hmm.
And then I'm going to lead that person back to his cell.
Uh-huh.
No one else will ever enter the switch room until I lead the prisoner there, the next prisoner, and the next one, and the next one, and each prisoner is going to do the same thing. I'm going to choose prisoners at random, U27, and I may choose the same guy three times in a row, or I can jump around and come back, but in the end, it's going to be the same number of times each person visits. And okay, now here's the thing.
Okay.
In enough time, everyone's going to visit the room, the switch room, and at any time, any one of you can declare to me, we have all visited the switch room. And when someone says that, if it's true, you will all be set free. And if it is false, I'm going to feed you all to the alligators or whatever. The bad thing is going to happen.
Okay.
So you get to meet today all together.
To come up with a strategy.
To come up with a strategy.
And then at the end, who declares that?
Any
of the prisoners declares, we've all been to the switch room.
We've all been to the switch room. And so then, and if it's true, everyone goes free. So how would you devise a plan? Can you think of this? How would you devise a plan so that you, one of the 27 prisoners, would be able to say, or one of you would be able to say to the warden, we've all been to the room. What do you think? There is a way.
There is a strategy to
there do this.
There
is a strategy.
Okay, well, there's 27. That's a good number of people.
That's
and
a
they
good
can
number
be
people.
Pulled at random.
At random.
And so you don't. There's no way of knowing by time. It has to be the position of the switches. So you have to have a strategy for that. If you if every person just flips up and down, you're eventually going to have one switch that's up, but that would be throughout the entire process.
Yep.
So half the time it's going to be up and half the time it's going to be down.
So you can see the problem.
Yes.
Okay, tell you what. Hold on to that thought,
yeah,
and we'll come back to it near the end of the episode, and
okay,
I'll see if you've got a better answer.
Okay, and do you think people are going to be able to think about this while they're listening to us ramble?
Yes, so listeners, while we are rambling,
if you get bored,
if you get bored in our rambling,
you can try to solve this problem.
Solve the problem of the 27 prisoners.
And you've got a solution at the end of the episode.
And at the end of the episode, we will tell you the solution.
All right, sounds fun.
Should the government have the power to take a person's life as a form of punishment?
Believe not. I can't find, if we're looking at it from a biblical perspective, I can't find that in the gospel.
Yes, I do. Specifically murderers. Murderers and basically anyone who's done intense violent actions against people and there's at a point where they're not going to be able to rehabilitate and change their ways, you know?
Ultimately, no. I think if a person has done something severe enough to where their life could be taken from them as a punishment, I think it would be more of a punishment to sit in a dark room or somewhere and think about it for the rest of their days instead of the easy way out, which would be to die. But also, after watching Harry Potter and seeing Avada Kedavra and the Cruciatus Curse in the last couple days, well, it didn't make me think about that, but I'm relating it now like it's so harsh to just end it for someone and end their chance of redemption.
I think I'm anti-capital punishment in our society, but there, for example, maybe a cartel boss in Mexico that can't be in prison, that's guilty. There's a scenario where the government should be able to execute a prisoner, but I am anti-capital punishment in America.
Okay, yes, I think when it's egregious and completely out of the bonds of any moral straits, I think they should have that ability. I don't use that term lightly in terms of capital punishment for just anything, but I think if it's really severe, they should have that ability.
You know, my position on this has really changed over the years. I feel like I've come to believe that the government and the justice system gets it wrong so often that I've become uncomfortable with the government having that right. So I would say, today, I'm very uncomfortable with it. If there's, maybe there is a circumstance where it would be fine, but for the most part, I would say no.
I'm Alan Cothran.
I'm Shelby Keegan.
Matt Pardue.
My name is William Rooker.
Shelley Shepard.
Paula Jarbo.
If you could speak directly to lawmakers about the death penalty in places where the death penalty is legal and used, what would you say to them?
I think I would honestly want to ask pro-life lawmakers how they can justify the death penalty. I've never understood how you can be pro-life, but you can wave the death penalty flag, and that's something that I've wrestled with. I've never understood if you're pro-birth or pro-life, how you're pro-death penalty.
It seems to me the only people that are executed are those that cannot afford a high-dollar defense, and it's not fair, it's not equitable, it's not true justice if the only people being executed are the poor people that can't afford top-notch attorneys.
Ooh, that's a rough one, because I think there's no set standard for any kind of punishment for criminals. They don't, you know, some people get a lot of years for murder, some people don't get many years for murder, so I don't think there is any set standard for that, and I wish there was. I wish they would say, you know, if this happens, you should be able to inflict this punishment, but I don't think that they have that standard yet.
Hey, Willie, today's topic is the death penalty.
Yeah.
And this is one that people are very divided on.
It is.
And it's important. It's maybe not recognized as important at the moment, but it comes and goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. With political cycles and with Supreme Court cases and various things.
Sure, sure.
And I think we should take a look at it because it's worthy of nuance.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's way more complicated, I think, than a simple bumper sticker slogan.
Yeah, and I've, you know, just some basic facts about it.
Okay.
We've executed about 1,500 plus people in about 28 states. And currently, most states do not have the death penalty,
yeah.
And there are a handful that do.
Yeah.
And
so that 1,500 is since 1977, I think.
Correct.
When the death penalty was reinstated.
Yes.
Yeah,
since that time. And, you know, of course, Trump reinstated the federal death penalty, which had been on the outs for some time.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, there are lots of capital offenses.
Yep.
Genocide, war crimes, murder with torture,
yep.
Treason,
yep.
Terrorism,
right.
Espionage,
yep.
Extensive drug trafficking,
yeah.
Murder for hire.
Oh, my goodness.
So I got to quit that job. attempting to kill a witness, you know, and that kind of tampering with
the legal
system.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, in 2021, there was a poll that said that about 60% of the population was supporting the death penalty.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. UK has similar polls. About 65% say they support the death penalty. And yet, hardly anybody's doing it. And it's very expensive and it's fraught with appeals and time and media.
Yeah.
It's a complicated issue.
It is a very complicated issue.
In 1971, the UN passed a resolution that the death penalty be restricted, that it be looked at closely.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we want to do today. We want to look at I've read a bunch of stuff about it, as you have.
Yep, yep.
And we looked into different arguments, and a lot of them have logical fallacies, like anything else.
Oh yeah.
There were tons of pleas to emotion, or a plea to authority, or various other logical fallacies that I could identify.
Yeah, that's right.
But when I distilled all the basic arguments down and kind of systematized them, I came up with 10.
Okay.
And I want to go through them one by one.
Okay.
And we'll try to keep them in order and, you know, in their spot so that we can highlight these 10 arguments for and against. There's a pro and a con for each of these arguments.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, about the death penalty. And so we'll just go one by one and kind of have a little discussion about each. You good with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first argument is the legality or the morality. Is this something that a government ought to be doing?
Yeah.
Or do they have the right to do this?
Yeah. Does a government have a right to take someone's life?
Right.
Yeah.
And part of the arguments that where people get confused is between the individual and the government.
Yeah, sure.
And we're not talking about individuals. We don't believe individuals have vigilante rights.
Correct.
This is a government's right.
Yes.
Or is it? Let's talk
about
that.
Yeah.
So some people feel that that for certain crimes they are so vulgar that that the government has a responsibility to execute people for that level of crime.
Mm.
Others feel like that penalty is cruel and unusual and unconstitutional according to the United States Constitution. Because it involves killing, and when is there ever an appropriate time to kill?
Right.
And so that's the basic discussion here in argument one.
Got it.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, certainly the Bible talks about how a life for a life, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and then a life for a life, right? So going to Genesis 6, just after the flood, God says, for your lifeblood, I will require a reckoning. From every beast, I will require it, and from man. From his fellow man, I will require reckoning for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed.
Right.
For in the image of God, he was made. And so, yeah, when someone murders, the right thing, the moral thing, justice requires that their life be taken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I don't know how you can get around Genesis 6 saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the question, though, is, I guess part of what you're saying is the government the right entity to do that?
Well, yeah, I can't think of another entity. I mean, I don't think it's, I mean, you look at Old Testament Israel and their ceremonial or religious laws are commingled with their moral laws or commingled with their civil laws. And we have the separation of church and state. And I definitely don't think that in the separation of church and state, there is no other theocracy. You might, you know, Islam may try to create a theocracy.
Sure, they do.
That's their principle, right? It's very political system tied into their religious beliefs. I don't think that should exist. I don't think Iran should execute people for religious reasons.
Yeah.
I think that the civil law needs to reflect the moral code.
Yeah.
And if you have a different morality as Islamic nation, then that's okay. I can I can go with that.
Yeah.
As long as people are free to come and go.
Yeah.
Which they're not. But in our society, where people are basically free to come and go, and they, you know, our morality, I think, should be based upon Christianity and biblical principle. Although there's a lot of hermeneutics that has to be done there. There are a lot of people who have bad hermeneutics and bad biblical principle they're drawing from,
or
taking things out of context.
Sure.
But you're right. In terms of what the scripture says, it's hard to argue that this isn't God's way.
Right, right.
That when he established his government in the Old Testament, at the very least we can say, in this point in history, God's way was for life to be taken when you have profaned the image of God with murder.
Yeah. And in the Old Testament, when God is setting up, through the Mosaic Law, the nation of Israel, there is an enormous number of things that, crimes, that call for capital punishment.
Yes. Yes. There is even a passage in Numbers where a Sabbath breaker who's gathering sticks on the Sabbath is stoned for it.
Right.
He's brought before Moses. Moses goes to the Lord
So there's a trial, if you will. It's done with the government's backing, if you will, mm-hmm. and he is publicly stoned mm-hmm. for his crimes. And the crime is breaking the Sabbath.
Right.
So that's pretty different than what we're saying as a separated church and state nation.
Yes, that's right. Well, yeah. But the question before us now is, does the government have the right to put people
yes.
to death?
So it's not very simply put, the Bible says this, therefore, because it says it in a context.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's not simple because part of the trouble here is that while there are a few examples, there actually are not many examples in the Bible of the death penalty actually being used.
Yeah, yeah.
There's only just a few. And actually, there are many people that I would expect deserve the death penalty based on the Mosaic law that don't get it.
But that's kind of begging the question because we don't, just because they didn't do it doesn't mean that they shouldn't have.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair
so, enough. But I guess the concept that God established this, in other words, what's the principle that can be drawn from that
okay.
and applied across the globe?
Yeah.
Right? If we believe God is the Lord of the nations and, you know, his word is true, which we do,
yeah.
Then as two Christians speaking, yeah. we believe the Bible has to set forth principles, the morality that we should then legislate.
Right.
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 So what is, you know, how do we handle that in terms of, is this legal? Is it moral? And I would say that what is communicated, the principle is that the image of God is upon man.
Yes.
And therefore, they are deeply important and full of dignity, and that is not to be disregarded, and they are not to be murdered. They're not to be abused and tortured.
Yeah.
And the penalty for this, according to God, is some form of capital punishment. Mm-hmm. And so this is picked up by Ecclesiastes that says there is a time to kill. Mm-hmm. So some people say, well, there's never a time to kill. Well, then you're disagreeing with the word of God. There is a time to kill. It doesn't say specifically mm-hmm. in that passage when the time is. Mm-hmm. We have to kind of look at the whole of counsel of Scripture. But there is a time for it.
Right.
And then if you look at Romans 13, we have a pretty clear understanding that the government has been established by God to enforce affliction on the evildoer.
Yes.
And it says they do not bear the sword for nothing.
Right.
Meaning a sword is for killing.
Yes.
And so the government has this authority from God to execute people, but it gets a lot more complicated.
It does.
From there,
it does. I was about to complicate it here because both Genesis 6, it says that.
Genesis 9, right?
Oh, is it Genesis 9?
Yeah, it's after the flood.
Sorry, Genesis 9. Yeah you're right. I was saying 6.
That's right.
9. So in Genesis 9 and in Romans 13, I think that it can be interpreted, to say that this is the way that the world works, not necessarily the way the world should work or the way that God has prescribed. God has put the government authorities in place for sure to restrain evil. Mm-hmm. And it's true that that happens. However, that doesn't mean that God wants all the governments to be putting people to death. I think that another way to think about Genesis 9 is not that we should put people to death, but rather the only thing that will pay for a life taken is a life. That is, human life can only be measured in its own currency. Mm-hmm. If I kill someone and then, you know, then I can give $100,000 and say, okay, now justice has been met, then that person's life is worth $100,000, right? And it may be that what God is saying in Genesis 9 is not, if I kill someone, then I ought to be killed, but rather trying to show the value of human life.
I can see that point, especially when you look at some of the case law in the
yes.
Old Testament where you could pay for certain crimes, but you could not pay for murder.
Correct.
That required their life.
Correct.
I hear that point. I'm not sure, and this is me saying, when I approach the Scripture, I'm not sure I see that.
Okay.
I think I see in Genesis and Romans 13 especially, it's saying God has established this for this reason. Mm-hmm.
You know, it says in Romans, government is agent of wrath. God's mm-hmm. agent of wrath mm-hmm. to those who are causing trouble.
Yes.
And so it sounds much more active, but the question then becomes in all these different arguments mm-hmm. how that is applied.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in principle, like you know, a clergy member asked me, a layperson asked me, where does this come from that mm-hmm. a government has the ability to kill?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it comes from the Bible. It comes from Genesis 9. It comes from Romans 13. It comes from the things we've mentioned. There is a time to kill.
Yep.
God has established this authority, and it has this certain power. So in terms of this argument, I don't know where I'm hearing you. I land on it's moral because God said so, and it's legal because it's what God established.
Hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it has to be, in every case, done this way.
Yeah.
With the caution, though, I caution myself because my heart says this has been so, and when we get into these other arguments, it's such a jumbled mess.
Yep.
Like, it's a cluster.
Yep.
And my heart says, well, we should be very, very, very careful with this one.
Yeah.
And then the other side of the coin tells me, now, who am I to say to God that if he says murder deserves capital punishment, should I be saying, no, you're wrong about that? You know, it gives me caution.
Yeah,
to say if this is what God wants, are we to disagree with him?
Yes, and I am not as convinced, I think, as you are that the Bible is saying that you should do this.
Yeah.
I think it's very clear that a life is worth a life.
Yes,
and there is no justice, no true justice, without that exchange.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. However, when the clearest example of the government can do this is from Romans 13, and the government doesn't bear the sword in vain. Okay, you're right. It's an agent of wrath for those evildoers.
Mm-hmm.
It does not specifically say that wrath is taking someone's life for what they have done, or that governments ought to do that.
Okay, but bearing the sword, you're not going to hack their limb off.
Sure, you know. That's happened actually a bunch in the ancient world.
But I don't think that's what the Bible is suggesting.
Well,
that we hack people's limbs off.
It doesn't say specifically.
Well, it says a life for a life.
Yes.
I mean, the principles of cruel and unusual punishment in our Constitution come from biblical principle.
Oh,
that you don't abuse and torture people.
Yes. I can see both sides of it. I'm not saying that it's ridiculous to say that, you know, I can see the biblical argument for it. I can. But I don't think that it is that cut and dry as a lot of people think. It's difficult for me to say.
Well, and that's why we're having this discussion.
Yes.
So that's the first argument is this moral? Is this legal? And you're saying,
I think that that's why I wanted to distinguish the two at the beginning is because morality clearly a human life is worth a human life, and there's no other justice unless that is paid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I see in Scripture that God has mandated governments or even allowed governments to bring that justice to be.
Hmm. So I would definitely say he's allowed it.
Allowed
very
in the sense
comfortable
that,
saying that.
Okay, so allowed.
Yeah.
You're right. There's no doubt about that because that actually has happened. And so and everything that happens, God allows. So in that sense, yes. But for him to be happy with it, maybe not happy, even like this is the right thing to do, the mm-hmm. right thing for us to do, I'm not sure that I see that very clearly in Scripture, although it is suggested.
I think you'd have to say it is mandated to Israel.
Yes.
Because
absolutely.
There are clear cases, just like the one I mentioned of the Sabbath breaker, where they bring them to the Lord and the Lord says, stone them.
Right.
And so, and that's a whole other discussion as to why God does that. I mean, we could get into real detail. You know, like, is this a deterrent? Is this
Well, let's get into that a little bit later.
Right.
But, there's no doubt that God prescribes the death penalty.
Absolutely.
Very, very clearly. But he also prescribes, I'm going to open up a can of worms here.
Uh-huh.
He also prescribes genocide in going into the promised land and wipe everyone out, the men, women, the children, and even the animals.
Yeah.
Wipe them all out.
Right.
And that is, I think that That clearly was for a unique time, clear to me,
yes.
for a unique
yes.
time
I'm
for a particular you. Redemptive purpose. And I think that an argument can be made effectively, although it is not as airtight, but can be made effectively that the death penalty was in the same way.
I'm hearing you on this.
Yeah,
yes, and that's why I said we have to at least say it was mandated to Israel.
That's correct.
The Old Testament theocracy, where they were God's agent of wrath to the Canaanites at that period of time.
Yes.
They were his tool of judgment over them.
Yes.
By the way, he's used nations to judge his own people. You read the book of Habakkuk, that's the whole principle of the book, is that God can use nations to execute his justice. But in this case, he told his people to do these what would now be, or without him saying this, would be crimes, would
Correct.
Be genocide.
Correct.
For that time and that point in history.
That's right.
And so, yes, I think we have to agree it was mandated to Israel, but is it mandated to, say, the United States?
Yeah. And so that's why I think that actually that's a really good example of this is God's justice that he doesn't want nations to be carrying out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do, they are going to be punished by him for it, something like that.
Yes.
And so does the death penalty fit into that? I think maybe.
Yeah, I can definitely see and that's why this is like a hermeneutic, theological conversation.
Tough.
That's why we wanted to start here, because it can get very muddy for a lot of people.
Yes.
And so just, I think we are in agreement as far as morality.
Yep.
There is a principle here of morality where we say, this is the value of human life. This is the only thing that can pay for this life.
Yes.
It doesn't fix it, but it's like, it's determining that the dignity of human life, the image of God upon human flesh, is unto life and death.
Right.
It's that serious.
Correct.
It's that high a payment.
Yes.
And so I think the morality is in place. I think the ability or the authority to do it is in place biblically.
Yep.
The mandate is the question.
Yep.
Should governments be doing this when they're not an Old Testament theocracy?
Right.
That is up for debate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably not, but I can see both sides of it for sure.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's the first point, legality and morality. The second one is closely related, and that is retribution.
Oh, yeah.
Is this justice?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And an eye for an eye is largely the Old Testament principle.
Yes.
Right. And theologians have made the point that this is really a limiting point.
Correct.
That if you steal something, you can't just go kill someone in retribution.
That's right. That's
right. That the punishment has to match the crime.
Yes.
And so it's trying to limit people from excessively punishing.
Yes.
But when it comes to human life, what do you do?
Right. Right. Right.
Because, well, as we said, there's nothing else that can pay for that.
Right.
So the retribution argument is that the penalty is needed because of the wrongdoing. It reaches a level that it's required.
Yeah.
The argument against it is that an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. That reformative justice is more productive than retribution.
Yes.
Where do you come down on this one? What is it, real justice, or is it the only real justice, or is it not?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there is retribution. An eye for an eye, a life for a life. There is retribution, but I honestly don't see the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the point of us doing it now because then the whole world is blind.
Mm-hmm.
Not just blind, but the whole world is going to die in that sense, right? I mean, it's all of us. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount that if we have hate in our hearts for our brother or sister, we've performed murder. You know, we have murdered them, and we're guilty of that commandment. And so if I get all that I deserve in retribution for the sins that I have done, then the entire world is dead.
Yes, I totally agree with that on the individual basis. In terms of our personal relationships, somebody has to forgive.
Yes.
You can't go back and forth hurting people endlessly.
That's right.
And everyone dies and everyone suffers.
That's right.
Forgiveness requires suffering.
Yes.
You have to absorb the sin of what's been done to you. That's wrong.
That's right.
Legitimately wrong.
Yes.
It has to be absorbed. You have to suffer it. There's no other way. If you try to pay it back, you just do the same thing down the road.
That's right.
I completely understand that and agree with that.
Yeah.
I do think there's a bit of difference when you're talking about a government as an established authority. And I do wonder, and this is why it's so closely related to the first point, I do wonder if they have a moral and legislative responsibility to exact this kind of justice.
Is that not what God is saying? That's the question for me. And if he is saying that, if you say, no, this is justice in this case, then we ought to have governments doing this.
Yeah.
I'm not as convinced as you are that God isn't mandating that.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely slippery, and I think it's definitely worth a good deep discussion theologically.
Sure.
But it seems like there is no other possible retribution. I don't think life in prison pays. If you have your wife murdered, that person going to jail, there's just no way to pay for it. Whether
right.
it's life
no
in
doubt.
Prison, whether it's money, whether no matter what it is, it just can't return your wife to you. It's the finality of death and murder and those kinds of crimes.
That's right. I would say that with the only way to have actual retribution for murder or for something like that is actually to put someone to death. But again, I don't see the point of it. For governments.
Well, Stephen Stewart has a quote here. It says, I believe life is sacred. It cheapens the life of an innocent murder victim to say that society has no right to keep the murderer from ever killing again. In my view, society not only has the right, but the duty to act in self-defense to protect the innocent. That's going to quickly lead us into the third argument of deterrence.
Well, let's go there.
So we can start combining these things together. Deterrence is the third. Does the death penalty deter crime?
Yeah.
Which is different than retribution. Retribution is saying this is the just payment, right?
Correct.
There is no other payment.
Yeah.
We need to think about that along with deterrence. Does a death penalty deter people in society from committing murder? And if you think about this from an individual point of view, think about yourself. You reserve the right to murder people.
Mm-hmm.
If you're honest with yourself.
Sure.
If you're thinking, well, if it rose to such an occasion, I could do this.
Yeah.
Then you have a question of whether you should or whether you will.
Yeah.
But you have a sense that that there's danger in you.
Yeah.
And if you are driven with a crime of passion,
yeah.
There's been some offense that has enraged you, or
sure.
You're probably not thinking about what's going to happen to you.
That's right.
And that's typically the case. When people do these crimes, one, they think they're not going to get caught.
Yep.
Or if they do get caught, they're not even thinking about it. They're just not concerned about it. They're
right.
So concerned with what has happened to them, the injustice that's occurred or the way that they feel that they just act upon it.
That's right.
And in that way, I don't think the death penalty is any form of deterrence.
And the evidence bears that out.
Right.
And so when you have two jurisdictions that are side by side, you think like a big city that kind of spans both jurisdictions, and there is capital punishment on one side and not on the other, and so it's the same geographic area, whatever.
Right.
There's no difference in the number of people who are committing crimes on one side and the other. Same thing kind of things happens when the death penalty is abolished in some place, and you know, time goes on, the exact same place, it doesn't change the numbers. And so the evidence is actually pretty overwhelming that the death penalty does not deter violent crime.
Yeah, because people aren't thinking about the punishments
Correct.
For their crime.
Correct.
However, there is a way that I think there is deterrence.
Okay.
And that is a lot of people who commit these kinds of crimes do them again.
Yes.
There are the one-offs, there's the angry boyfriend or whatever, but there are also they're drug lords and they're gangbangers and they're people who are murderers.
Right.
And they account for large numbers of murders.
That's correct.
And if you don't execute them, then people get killed in prison all the time.
Sure.
They can kill people in prison.
Yeah.
And so that is one deterrent. You're shutting down a known murderer's capability of producing future murders.
Yeah.
That's a valid deterrent.
It is. And I think that it is not too different than locking someone up for a lifetime. But you're right. Murders do happen in prison. I think I would quibble with you saying that they happen all the time. But it happens. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, well, okay. Maybe that was stated too strongly.
Yeah.
I don't know the numbers there.
Putting a serial murderer or putting a drug lord or something in prison and giving that person the restraints that they need, they're going to commit far fewer murders. that's a significant restraint.
I think that's arguable because if they are the leader of a gang or the leader of a cartel, they still order murders of their henchmen, their gang members, and so they're still committing all kinds of crimes from prison.
I hear what you're saying, and that I think is a failure of the prison to restrain them properly.
Yeah, so that's why I want to throw in the Hopper prison reform because I couldn't stop thinking about it as I was looking through these arguments.
I've been thinking about this too. Okay,
it's driving me nuts.
Let's not talk about that. But
we got to put that in the Hopper.
Let's put
prison
it in the
reform because that's a huge problem and it's related to this, but it's not what we're talking about right now.
That's right.
But so currently with our prisons, there are still murders happening in prison and being ordered throughout prison and in civilian life.
Correct. But the question is not, can someone murder from prison or do crimes from prison? The question is the death penalty itself the thing? And that, I think that there's not evidence for that. That the death penalty is preventing many murders. A deterrent.
I don't know what the evidence is in that regard because that'd be really slippery and hard to find out and fraught with peril of the statistics of people's agendas.
Sure.
But I do know that murders occur in prison. Yep. I do know that people order murders outside of prison. Yes. I do know that there are people who have that sort of bent or lean. They're murderers.
Yeah.
They're bad guys.
Yeah.
And the question is, do we allow them to live knowing that this is their bent and this is what they're looking to do and they'll do this in the future given the opportunity? Can we successfully prevent them from having that opportunity altogether? Maybe, but currently we don't.
Right.
So in that way, I think there is an argument for some deterrence.
Yes, I think it's very, very small.
Right.
Very,
it might not
very
be a strong
small.
Argument.
You're talking about a theoretical idea.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, okay. We've got to work through these.
All right. Yeah. What's next?
Here's another quote by Paul Mushick. He says, "Sometimes there is no doubt that people are killers because their sins are recorded by surveillance cameras or bystanders' phones. And with that evidence, other than mental illness, there's no reason not to execute those who commit the most horrific crimes. And while executions are rare, having the death penalty can also be a bargaining chip for authorities as they investigate crimes. It's also necessary to have capital punishment because some crimes simply are so horrific that any other punishment, including life in a cage, is insufficient," end quote. So he brings up another possible deterrent in that if you have the death penalty as an option, it allows the justice system to have greater weight in coercing people to turn, to give up their superiors, to whatever. You know, it's another tool in their belt.
Sure.
Whether they use it or not, it's still there available to them, and that could help some deterrence. A guy who blows up a government building and kills almost 200 people. I mean, do we really need this guy around scheming his next, you know, there is some argument for deterrence in there.
Not for deterrence. You're talking about retribution. You're going back to retribution.
No, deterring future crimes.
Well, if he is locked up and not able to get out.
Well, that's,
he's not going to blow up more buildings.
Maybe. There are copycat crimes. There's influence that people have. It's not as cut and dry as we put them in a cage. Therefore, they're no longer a problem. I'm saying there's some argument for deterrence in that category.
I don't see it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right.
Okay. So the next one is the fact that innocent people have been executed.
Yes.
If you have the death penalty.
Yep.
And you have a judicial system that's flawed and broken.
Yep.
And people can be killed inappropriately, accidentally, whatever.
Yep.
Then you can't get them back.
That's right.
So this is the fourth argument for and against death. Okay, so what do you think about this one?
I think it's actually very compelling to me that we should not have the death penalty, capital punishment.
Yeah.
Because so many people are on death row and have been exonerated, and people who have been put to death have also been exonerated.
Yeah,
it is. You know, the United States may have the best judicial system in the world, and still we get it wrong so much of the time.
Right. I mean, the thought of being thrown in prison for my lifetime, for a crime I didn't commit.
Yep.
Or just being executed for that crime I didn't commit.
Yep.
Boy, that's a kind of a toss-up to me. I think I'll go with life in prison, I think. But I don't know how horrific prison can be or how suitable it is. I really don't know because I've never been in there.
Sure.
And so either way, it is tragic.
Oh, yeah. Both of those are terrible.
Terrible and tragic. And I definitely, and this brings up another subcategory that we need to throw into the hopper, and that as much as there is scripture suggesting that God wants an eye for an eye or suggesting retribution or the death penalty, there's that much more scripture saying that you have to have fairness in the courts.
Completely.
But that is point. That's argument number five, all the injustice in our court system. So four is just a hair ahead of that, in that we don't want to be executing innocent people.
Yeah.
And this has happened. And people are exonerated on death row, which some people would say that means that the appeals process is working and it's a valid thing for it to be some length of time for those appeals to take place and for more evidence to be gathered.
Yeah.
And so death row is an important part of the death penalty.
Yeah.
Others disagree with that.
Right.
And some people say, well, you know, we're trying our best to keep this from making mistakes, but sometimes that happens, and this is part of society, it's part of life. Ah, man, that's a really, man, this is a...
You know, I appreciate that that in any situation, there's going to be mistakes made. I get that.
Right.
We're human beings,
right.
And that's fine. However, the statistics that I saw, and there seems to be consistency about this, for every 8 executions in the United States, one person is exonerated from death row.
Uh-huh.
That is staggering how many times we've gotten it wrong. To me, that is staggering.
Yeah.
It is way, way too much. It is way too much. Should we err on the side of making sure that no guilty person ever goes free, or should we err on the side of making sure that no innocent person is put to death?
And yep.
To me, there is no question which of those I'd rather be on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
I mean, this is the weight of this argument is that the finality of death means if you made a mistake, you can't correct it. You can't get them out of prison because they're gone.
But a lifetime in prison means that you can appeal. So there's still some hope. There is goodness. You're right. I don't want to be in prison for the rest of my life for a crime I didn't commit.
Mm-hmm.
However, life in prison is still life, and it is still a gift from God, and it's terrible. Maybe it's analogous to living with some horrible disease or disability or something. I mean, your life is not what it could be or what it should be, but it is still life, and you still have relationships. You're still going to have a relationship with God and with others and bring meaning and beauty and joy to the world, where with death, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's it. And so, yeah, to me, the fact that we have so many innocent... So what would be the number that I would be comfortable with? Oh, no, we've got a pretty good system. We just make some mistakes. I don't know what that number would be.
Right, exactly.
But 1 out of 8? Come on now. This is crazy.
Okay, so 1 out of 8. So for every 8 executions, that number doesn't include like how many people died on death row.
Correct.
How many people... You know,
That doesn't mean that one person is innocent for every 8 who are put to death. It just means that one is exonerated.
Yeah.
For every 8 that are put to death, those are really clear. How many people actually are innocent and that have not been exonerated yet? How many people are innocent that have been put to death? You know, there's a lot of those questions we don't know.
Right.
But we know that for every 8 executions, one is exonerated who's living. To me, those numbers are way out of proportion. We got a lot of people on death row who are innocent.
Yeah, I'm just saying that what that number doesn't include are the people on death row who are guilty. Or
sure.
Who have passed away.
That's right.
And so, but you're right. That's a pretty big number.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the number would be for like the margin of error.
Yeah.
How much, you know, mistakes are we going to allow in a society?
Yeah.
Some people say none ever. And well, there are other arguments here. This is just one of them.
Sure. But 8 to 1, that is not a margin of error. That is a serious problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like some people say, well, that just perhaps it means that the appeals process is doing its job. But I don't know. What would be a better or more accurate statistic would be the number of executions that we know were innocent people.
That's the number I'd really want to know.
Yeah, and that's tougher. You know, yeah, you want to know how many people are guilty, how many people are innocent, but that's a really, really, that's almost impossible
right,
to know.
Right.
Right. So we got to look at actual, like,
yeah,
real things. Yeah.
So right on the heels of this discussion,
yep,
is the injustice in our courts.
Yep.
This is argument 5.
Yep.
That in our history, we have abused minorities.
Yeah.
They have not gotten the same level of justice.
Oh, yeah.
And even further back in history, the government has been a tool of oppression.
Yes.
Where a king would just kill people who are his enemies, political enemies, or this happens all the time. It's still happening today.
Yep.
China kills more people than the rest of the world combined.
Yep.
Because they have a totalitarian government.
Yeah.
And they're using that as a tool,
yep,
to enforce fear and control over their people.
That's right.
I think that's horrendous, right?
Yep, terrible.
I think that's terrible.
Yep.
And that goes way back into history.
Yes.
Humans are flawed. Governments are flawed, therefore.
Yep.
And so the arguments for the death penalty, people say, well, this is a historical problem and it is being fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There have been disproportionate executions to with minorities.
Right.
But now they're saying a lot of what's happening today, mm-hmm, has to do with the disproportion of black crimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily that the more, you can't just say, are there more black people on death row?
Mm-hmm.
That means that the society's racist. Well, right, there are other reasons why they might be on death row, and
that's
one
true
of them might be crime.
Yep.
Now, that gets to another topic that we have to throw into the hopper, right? Why is there more crime in the black community?
Yep.
There are reasons for that.
Yep.
And there are historical reasons for that.
Yep.
That's another, let's throw that in the hopper.
Let's throw that in the hopper.
So we've got prison reform in the hopper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so some people say there's little current evidence that blacks are treated unfairly. What do you think about that?
So I think this is the kind of thing that you can twist the statistics. That's
right.
That's pejorative,
it's
the way
a hard one
I'm putting it up there. But yeah, I think statistics, you can pick the statistics that you want to make the point that you've already concluded. And but it does, certainly historically, this has disenfranchised, our criminal justice system has disenfranchised and has been much, much harsher on minority communities, and especially the black community,
right,
than on whites. Has that been fixed? Well, starting like in the 1920s, whites were saying, it has been fixed, it's no longer a problem.
Right.
Starting then, and every generation since then has said that. Now, we're saying that right now. Is it true? Well, someday, theoretically, it will be true. Theoretically.
Theoretically.
And are we there that right now? You know what? I kind of don't think so.
Right.
I kind of don't think so. No matter what the, you know, so you can pick out the whatever numbers you want. You're right. There does seem to be more crime, and especially violent crime, in the black community. Maybe that's for good reason. But also, it seems that when people come, if your victim is black,
mm-hmm,
then you're more, then you're less likely to get the death penalty than if your victim is white.
Right.
Those kind of things, I say, man, what's going? We're not there yet, and so there's still injustice in our American system.
Yes, I think a conservative, and this is a quote that I want to read from from Charles Stinson. He says, "Any remnant of racism in the criminal justice system is wrong, and we should work to eliminate it. Nobody is in favor of racist prosecutors, bad judges, or incompetent defense attorneys. If problems arise in particular cases, they should be corrected, and often are." End quote. I think that appeals to a conservative, maybe a conservative white person the most. And I would say, you know, part of me wants to say yes, but the other part of me says, this is not true.
Yeah.
There are people who want racist prosecutors and bad judges and incompetent defense attorneys for blacks. There are people who still think that blacks are less than whites and they're vile and they should be treated, you know, they do.
Yeah.
They're out there.
That's right. Absolutely.
There's lots of people like that.
Yep.
We grew up with people like that around us. Like, I know this,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And there isn't fairness. And it's the courts are completely full of inequity.
Right.
And you think about this in terms of money. If you have more money, you get more high-powered lawyers and you get, you know, you can bog down the legal system and prolong things and exhaust people and make these arguments. And if you're a celebrity, we've had an episode about that. You know, people like you. You get a little break from the population, and if people don't like you, if you're just some poor black person, you know, and you're a minority, and you don't have the same clout or value in the eyes of some other people,
right?
good luck. And if you don't have the money to pay for those lawyers, and you got to, you know, deal with the guy who went to Bob's Law School, and you know, for free, your free defense attorney, and you know, it's just, and they're all just cutting deals anyway.
Right, right.
Where is the justice?
Right.
Our legal system is definitely a wreck. It takes people so long to even get a trial. They sit rotting in prison, waiting for a trial. Yeah. And if you're not a criminal going into prison, you'll be one coming out because you got to survive in there.
Yeah.
And so I think this is one of the biggest arguments. I don't know how many innocent people have been put to death. That's very, very troubling.
Yes.
But this one to me is really clear.
Sure.
We have a huge problem in our court system.
Yep.
So if we're relying on equity in our courts and they're not there, it's not there.
Yeah.
Then how can we enforce this death penalty? It
makes perfect sense to me.
There's some
so based on race, there's those racial injustice as well as socioeconomic injustice, for sure. And when we're talking about paying the ultimate price, how can we move forward with that when our system is so unjust?
Yeah, there's a deep need for reform in the whole system.
Now, I want to say, as along with that, it is clear to me that our system is more fair now than it has been in the past.
Yes,
I
absolutely
agree. And we may have the best system so far.
Right.
Is it good enough for me to be confident to use the death penalty? No, it is not.
Yeah, so I mean, this is where I'm wrestling.
Yeah.
This is a big friction point, the last two arguments. Because I don't see fairness. There are people who are unjustly. I mean, there's a famous case when DNA evidence came out of the Illinois court system, the death row.
Yes.
It's like, 11 people?
It was a bunch of them, all
something
at once.
Like 11 guys were exonerated by DNA.
Yeah, just all at once,
They were black guys on death row.
Yep.
But that's, man, that speaks pretty loudly about our history and our legal system and whether it works for blacks or not.
Right.
Okay, so let me just recap. We've talked about the morality and legality question, the issue of retribution.
Yep.
Does this deter future crime?
Yep.
What about innocent people being put to death?
Yep.
And then what about the injustice or partiality in our courts?
Yep.
The next argument or discussion, number six, is about the victims' families.
Okay.
So some would argue that the victims' families are the ones who most clearly need the closure or the retribution or the sense of justice that this person is gone.
Yeah.
And the finality of the death penalty is required because they don't want them ever getting out of prison,
mm-hmm.
either by pardon or by changing rules or laws mm-hmm. or parole or mm-hmm. escape. They don't want any fear that the person's ever going to get out again.
Mm-hmm.
That what was done was heinous. In our case, you know, in our system, it's not just murder. It's murder with torture or, you know, raping or some other kind of crime. So we know that this was a very, very bad thing.
Yes.
And the families need this.
Mm-hmm.
Others say that the families themselves suffer greater because they have a guilt that when a criminal is executed, they feel that it was in some way a survivor's guilt that our so-and-so was the reason that this person is now, which I think I'd have less of a problem with, but mm-hmm. apparently it's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the death penalty can take so long and can be so media friendly.
Yeah.
And there's that the retributive justice part doesn't bring your loved one back.
Right.
And so, the victim's family, that's what we're talking about now. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think it's what I have seen is that different victims' families want different things.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they are the best ones for us as a society to say, what do you want? And we'll do whatever you want.
Sure.
And so, I think this can go on either side. You know, some victims' families are going to find lots of closure with the death of the perpetrator. And others, that's going to haunt them for a long time. And I can appreciate the struggles with all of that and on different sides. I don't think this is a good argument for or against either way.
Yeah, I think what it does is most of the families want the death penalty.
Mm.
And that gives me caution to say, as we sit here in a room without a real life example in our families or currently in our hearts, maybe we can make this too theoretical, too hypothetical. Maybe we're too detached from the reality of the horrors of these crimes.
Yeah.
And so maybe we need to listen to their voices a bit to say, if I were in their shoes, I might be screaming and demanding this retribution.
Sure.
And I might be quoting all these Bible verses to do it. And I might, you know, like this, that gives me some pause.
Yeah.
To say, I need to make sure I'm putting myself in their shoes.
Yeah. You know, this actually reminds me of one of the most famous lines in a presidential debate was from 1988, the presidential debate between Michael Dukakis and George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
When he was running, and he eventually won. Well, let me play a clip for that.
Okay.
From that.
Question goes to Governor Dukakis. You have 2 minutes to respond. Governor, if Kitty Dukakis were raped and murdered, would you favor an irrevocable death penalty for the killer?
No, I don't, Bernard, and I think you know that I've opposed the death penalty during all of my life. I don't see any evidence that it's a deterrent, and I think there are better and more effective ways to deal with violent crime. We've done so in my own state, and it's one of the reasons why we have had the biggest drop in crime of any industrial state in America, why we have the lowest murder rate of any industrial state in America.
His Michael Dukakis's campaign ended right there. That was such a robotic response.
Yeah. I think the question was pretty crummy, too.
It was
just
horrible.
Bringing his wife in.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was. I felt my radar go up as soon as I heard the question.
Big time.
And he should have responded with a way that was relatable.
Yeah.
It was robotic. You're right. It was just very much about the information and not the heart of the... If the question is going to point his wife out, then there needs to be some sort of understanding of what that means to people who have lost someone.
Completely. I heard someone say that there's many, many different good responses to that, but one of them would be like this. If Michael Dukakis would have said, of course I would want to have the perpetrator put to death. I would like to have 10 minutes in a room with him with a baseball bat, and I'll put him to death myself.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the reason that we are a nation of laws, because that is not the right thing. And so that reminds me of what you're saying, because victims' families want to put someone to death, and I'm not sure that means that we need to put them to death.
That may not be
the right thing.
Yeah.
That's why we're a nation of laws. That's why the government is supposed to be doing this instead of victims' families. And so to say, oh, all the victims' families, well, not all of them, but a lot of them want to put someone to death, well, that makes perfect sense to me. I think that's what I would want too. That's why we don't let them be in charge of it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it's also really troubling to me when I've heard some liberals talk about their disdain for the death penalty. And it sounds like they just don't have any personal knowledge of what these people are suffering.
Fair enough.
They're really thinking about the criminal and not the person who's gone.
Correct.
And all the people who are weeping and crying. And,
correct.
And I think that there's a real oversight
yes.
on a liberal's part.
I completely agree.
And so that's why, that's my caution, is to say, hey, you're thinking of the people who are still here. You're forgetting about what happened.
Yes.
And there is no... there's no good payment for this.
Yes.
I think someone could very cogently argue this demands that life be taken from the person who perpetrated this crime. And so the victim's families, they're not to be ignored. Yeah.
They're not to be ignored. Although I don't think that not putting someone to death means that we are ignoring the victim's families.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we could be. But not necessarily.
Oh, yeah. But there are other ways to attend to their needs as a society, for sure.
There's probably more to be said about that, but let's move on to
move on.
The seventh discussion, and that is the method of execution.
Yep.
You know, back in the day, there was a firing squad.
That's still happening. That's still legal in the United States today.
In the United States?
Yep.
There are people being shot in the United States.
Well, probably not today, but it is a method that's being used, yes.
Well, you mean elsewhere, outside the United States?
No, in the United States.
I just asked you, so people are being shot by a firing squad in the United States?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're saying in the present tense.
Yes. Are they currently being shot?
Not in the moment. Uh-huh. Not at 2:11 in the afternoon. But yes, if someone is put to death, that is a method that is currently being used in the United States. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yep. That's interesting. Others, there's hanging.
Yep.
That was a very popular one for a very long time.
And still being used in the United States today.
Gas chamber.
Mm-hmm. Still being used.
The electric chair.
Yep, of course. That's very popular.
And the latest is the lethal injection.
That's the most popular in the United States.
And so each of these have pros and cons.
Yeah.
I don't know how much time we want to spend on this.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed that maybe I just asked myself, how would you want to be executed?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And I think I would want to drink a very strong cocktail of opiates or something that would completely knock me out. Yep. And then who cares after that?
Yep.
The thing is, then I'm drinking it. It's not being administered to me.
Sure.
And that there are people who just wouldn't do it or, you know, so how do you administer the death penalty in that method? You know, another thing I also thought about, I don't know why I'm chuckling about this, not really funny, is a guillotine.
Yeah, sure.
The guillotine put thousands of people to death.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, maybe that's the way I'd want to go, because it's really quick.
Yeah, it is very quick. And actually, my understanding is that it was invented as the most humane way of putting someone to death.
Yeah, an effort to be most humane.
Yeah.
I've also heard people say that it happened so quick that before your blood pressure, is like fractions of a second where you can acknowledge as you're looking out your eyes that your head has been separated from your body.
I've heard that.
I don't know. Whatever.
It's hard to say. I think it's possible, but I don't know.
All I do know is that when your blood pressure is gone, you go out.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I had to pick a way that I wasn't actively drinking or doing something, I would say the guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want that because it's bloody and messy, right? So these methods, they all have, there's a degree of suffering, degree of pain, or like here lately, there have been botched lethal injections.
Right.
This is supposed to be very easy and humane. You get you feel a tiny little needle prick like everyone does when they get blood from their doctor or any time throughout their life. They give you something to make you relax and go off to sleep, and then they administer a drug that kills you, stops your heart.
Mm-hmm.
This should be easy.
Yes.
But even this gets botched.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on method?
Yeah, I think it is, I haven't studied it enough to understand why is it that we are not able to come up with a method. I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. We have not been able to come up with a method that is humane. And, you know, yeah, I don't know. Medicine, that's not the right word to say, chemicals that administered like medicine that would kill you, that seems like something that should be not hard to do.
Right.
But I also know that a lot of doctors, most doctors that I've talked to about this, are going to refuse to participate.
Yeah. Well, that's another one of our arguments. So we'll hold on to that, yeah.
And so maybe that's part of it, is that the people who would know how to do it well refuse to participate and give their knowledge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, and some people would say, hey, who cares? Like, they did this horrible thing that killed 200 people brutally. Who cares that they suffer for a minute before they die?
Yep.
I disagree with that. I think that it should be done as in the most simplistic, painless, without any suffering. It's an administration of justice. Goodbye.
Yeah.
But I can understand why people would feel that way.
Sure.
Especially if, you know, people suffered, were tortured, and so forth.
Yeah.
But I think we do need to find a superior method if we're going to do this at all.
Indeed.
Some people say, what's barbaric? There were a lot of logical fallacies when I was reading related to this one.
Sure.
You know, in terms of this is an archaic throwback to some gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are lots of appeals to emotion and things here that weren't making a sound argument.
Right.
Um,
And I, you know, someone would say it's barbaric, and I'm thinking, well, you know what also is barbaric is allowing people who rape and murder and pillage and oppress and all that to do that.
Yeah.
That's barbaric.
Sure.
Right?
Sure it is.
So, okay. Anyway, the next one that you've already alluded to is the use of doctors. If you're going to do certain methods that require a doctor and they've taken a vow to not cause any harm,
right?
This is, some would argue, highly inappropriate.
Yeah.
To participate in executions. Others say, well, they're doing their job as demanded by the state, that they're just filling a role by something of a higher power, a higher authority.
Yeah.
I personally don't think doctors should be involved.
Okay. And
so if that means we need a different method, I've run into some doctors who are not very good with a needle. Mm-hmm. And I've met some phlebotomists who do this all day long who are fantastic with a needle.
Well, that's their job.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not sure that we need a doctor to do this. I think that it could be, people could be trained. If we want to do this, there are people who could be trained who have not taken the Hippocratic Oath who could do this effectively.
I disagree.
You disagree.
And I'll tell you why. Because the issue is not a botched a needle in the arm. That is not the problem. The problem is getting the right cocktail of drugs for this particular patient. So this is going to be someone who's not young and not real healthy, right? Probably. Mm-hmm. It may be someone who's young and healthy, but likely it's going to be someone with some health issues.
I'm not sure of that assumption, but continue.
Well, I say that because this is someone who has...
gone through the appeals
process. It's taken time. Whatever. Okay, so...
So it could be in their 30s very easily.
Okay, so let's... Nonetheless,
yeah.
It's someone... The problem is that, okay, what if you've got heart disease? What if you've got cholesterol? What if you've got cancer? What if you've got issues? And it's, okay, so what is the size of the person? What about their fat content? What about their muscle content? Mm-hmm. And so you need a doctor to talk... Doctors of medicine are not experts in pricking people, but there's... lots more phlebotomists than there are doctors. That's not the problem. The botched lethal injections comes from not getting the right dosages in the right order at the right timing, and people are being tortured, really, because they're relaxed, but then they're in incredible amounts of pain and not able to talk about it. And that requires a doctor knowing what those chemicals are going to do to this particular body.
I think that it doesn't require a doctor.
Okay.
I think that people can be trained in this way. You know, I have friends who are business majors, and they go into medical device sales or medical pharmaceutical sales, and they learn everything there is to know about these drugs far better than the doctors. They know more about the devices than the doctors who are putting them into people.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trained by, and they're business-minded people.
Yep.
But they've been trained how to do this and understand this. And so you're talking about chemists and pharmacists and people who don't have to be MDs.
Sure.
But you're right. There needs to be education involved if you're going to use lethal injection.
Yeah, yeah.
But
maybe that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that a doctor has to be involved, but I'm saying it's not the issue is not about the... someone getting the right the needle in the,
you know, the guillotine. It's really pretty simple.
Yeah,
and
firing squad, same thing.
And Bart the executioner can do that.
Uh huh.
You know,
that's right.
And so I don't know. I'm just saying I don't think doctors should be utilized or they have to be utilized.
I can see that.
I think it's a violation of their oath. That's my personal opinion.
Sure. Sure. So, me too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know any doctors who have said that they would be willing to do this. I would say that's. I would not want to participate. I would not want my doctor to participate in something like this.
Right. Right. Oh gosh. Okay. So then, number nine is, and I think these arguments get weaker and weaker as we go.
Okay.
And we're down to money here.
The expense
of one or the other.
Yep.
Some people think that it is cheaper to execute people.
Yep.
It ends up in the United States. That's not the case.
Correct.
That again could be an issue of our broken system. It could be an issue of people who are trying to abolish the death penalty, purposely making it more complicated and slow and difficult. It could be that that's just what's required to make sure that we've done the proper appeals, that we're not making a mistake and executing an innocent person. And so, but the issue of money to me is a little bit vulgar. It's a little bit vulgar when we're talking about the gravity of human life.
I agree.
And the image of God.
Yep.
But it is one of the things that people talk about.
Yep. Yeah, when it comes to the state, for sure, it is a resource. I'm with you. This is way down the line, and we are down the line. That's fine. But the state resources, and you know, this is going to be something that the public has to fund. And yeah, the death penalty costs, you know, to put someone to death is way more expensive than to have them just be incarcerated for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting.
It's counterintuitive, but it is really clear.
Yeah, I don't think it. It certainly, in my mind, wouldn't have to be that way, but it is, and that's again another topic. If in other words, if you want to have capital punishment, there's a number of things that need to be fixed.
Yep,
there are a number of things that need to be thought about more carefully and dealt with, and the expense of death row and the appeals process is maybe something that someone needs to solve.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last one I have here is the argument about the alternative to the death penalty, which is life without parole.
Correct.
And some people feel like it's just not enough. It doesn't hit the retributive thing enough, or it doesn't help the victims' families enough, or it allows for parole in other ways, pardons or things that could change in our legal system.
Yeah.
The people who are opposed to death penalty say, this is more humane than the death penalty. We're not going to execute innocent people because, you know, if we can find this out, then they can be released from prison if we were wrong about something.
Yeah.
People who are for the death penalty may say that life in prison is just as bad. You say it's not. I say I don't know because I've never been in prison.
Sure.
I know for me, well, the things that you said that I could still like. You know, I could do Bible studies, or I would seize that moment for good.
Yes.
But not everyone's going to do that. It may just be a place where they terrorize people endlessly.
Yes.
And rape their cellmates and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that may not be true for everyone. So life without parole is a valid option, and it's less expensive. You have anything else you want to say about that?
I like all that you've said. I think to add to it, there are some who would say, at least at times, that life without parole is actually, in some sense, a greater payment. Maybe that's not in the moral sense, but a bigger penalty for the crimes than to end it quickly with death.
Would say you have to pick one. You can't have that argument work in both ways.
Yes, I hear what you're saying from a rhetorical standpoint. That's true. And I think for some people, it's probably more of a punishment, and for others, it's less.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. But I think for some people who would really want to be put to death and for what they've done, and they're being racked with guilt, and they can't get past it, and so death is a kind of a sweet release. But for others, it's the opposite. And so it really depends on the person. Yeah.
It does. And you know, to me, like if life in prison means like weekly rapes, you know, I'm being raped and I'm terrorized and I'm living in fear, or I'm getting brutalized and beat up, and I'm not sure that's I'm not sure I could carpe diem. So I might just be an anxious mess, you know. Or you might just have to commit more serious crimes trying to defend yourself, and I don't know. So that gets back to prison reform, but okay, so there we go. Those are the when I looked at a wealth of information and different arguments, and those are the 10 top things that I think everything I've looked at distills into one of those points.
Yeah,
you know, is it legal and moral? You know, did the government have this right in the first place?
Right.
And then is retribution required?
Yep.
Third, is it a deterrence in any way?
Yep.
From future crime. Four, what about the fact that we have put innocent people to death and there are mistakes?
Yep.
Five, the fact that the court system is full of inequity.
Yep.
Six, consideration of the victims' families, which that's a ranging argument, and along with the method and the use of doctors and the expense, and then the runner-up, the alternative life without parole.
Yeah.
So that's that kind of comprehensively hits the highlights of all that's being discussed with this.
Yeah.
What is your official position?
Yeah. So I can see both sides of this for sure. And yeah. I hate to say it that way because I'm going to take a position here, but I think that we should be careful not to be so judgmental or be
flippant
yeah. with this.
Right.
I really think though that what I see in Scripture and then also looking at all these arguments, I am against the death penalty.
Okay.
I think that the Bible requires me to be for the death penalty theoretically, because there is a sense of justice that
right.
the only real justice that can come from a murder is that the life taken from someone else.
Yeah.
However, what I see in Scripture is that God calls us in the gospel to forgive, even as governments, to forgive and to try and build people up and to give grace. Jesus said to someone asking him a question, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's, right? And when he was doing that, they were showing him a coin,
right.
and they said, you know, should we pay our taxes or whatever? And he's looking at a coin with Caesar's image on it and
yeah.
saying, whatever is Caesar's, give it to Caesar. But what is God's, give it to God. And I think, of course, the main implication there is that we should give ourselves to God. We are in his image, and so we give ourselves
right.
to God. But I think a second implication is that this money really belongs to Caesar, and he can take it.
Yeah.
But people belong to God, and he can take them.
Uh-huh.
And combine that with what Jesus, you know, there was a group of men who bring to Jesus in the Gospel of John a woman who has committed a capital crime, and say,
yeah,
they say, okay, so we need to put her to death, and he says, whoever is without sin, let him cast the first stone. Mm-hmm. And okay, so he's talking. Here's someone who actually is guilty of a capital crime. And he's saying, no, we're going to preserve this person's life. And so I see just the gospel of grace and compassion. Now, we need to restrain evil. That seems really clear to me.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to taking someone's life, I don't think that that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't.
So the issue for that illustration is that they were not the government. And so I think that's very true for the individual. That's how we as individuals need to behave and act in society.
Yeah.
That I'm not without sin. I should not cast stones. I should, mm-hmm. I need to deal with this in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it argues that the government shouldn't, execute people.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think it's definitively clear,
yeah.
but
So it's like in the Old Testament, it's easy, right? Because mm-hmm. they bring people before the Lord
mm-hmm.
and the Lord says, execute them,
mm-hmm.
like I told you to.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty easy, right?
Because yep.
then you have the creator of the universe dealing out the judgment.
Yeah.
And when we have to do vice regency,
right.
and we have to deal out the judgment as governors, if you're in that position, you're a civil magistrate of some kind,
mm-hmm.
That is an awesome, and I mean awesome in an awful way,
mm-hmm.
in the old sense of awful,
mm-hmm.
An awesome responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And you are acting as God and as judge.
Yep.
And so I think that there is that established authority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have the right. And I think the morality is in place. But it is so tenuous because
mm-hmm.
You can't go straight to God and get a definitive. We have mm-hmm. to use wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
We have to use whatever checks and balances, whatever mm-hmm. plurality, however we can make this as close to the words of God or the judgment of God as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say I am very uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
But were you done, by the way? I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
But one of the things that nags me is this idea or this concept that if this is God's directive
mm-hmm.
for civil law
mm-hmm.
and we are disobeying it,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem. But when I look at the issues of other places where we're disobeying,
mm-hmm.
like fairness in the courts,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know, like racism and all the kinds of problems
yeah.
that we have with whether you're poor or rich and mm-hmm. what kind of justice you get,
mm-hmm.
the inequity is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're disobeying there,
should we be trying to enforce some higher call or greater authority or more awesome responsibility when mm-hmm. we're faltering mm-hmm. in the ways that we ought to be mm-hmm. fixing our society?
Yeah.
And I know we're on the right path. I know we're on the right track. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that it continues and gets better.
Yeah.
And then, but I think I have to reserve the right that the death penalty could be, I could be in full support of it in certain cases.
Mm.
You know, when someone, if something is caught on camera or something, it's just blatantly obvious. Mm-hmm. And this is an obvious terroristic activity that is just been devastating. I think I'm more inclined to say this is a pretty cut and dry, open and closed case.
Yeah,
we should execute this person.
Mm-hmm.
The government should do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only way to handle this appropriately,
mm-hmm.
because of the image of God on people, because mm-hmm. of the dignity of life, because of the weightiness of what they have done.
Yeah,
could that be brought all the way down to just a single murder? I think it could be if everything else is much better off.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because of the issues that I've mentioned.
Sure.
I don't think it's a deterrent for someone who's calculating to do a crime. What they're calculating is how not to get caught. And if they're not calculating, then they're not even thinking about what punishment's
right.
So I don't think I totally see that argument is weak, that it's a deterrent, except for I do see that there are certain people who are going to continue in this vein, and they, if you can't completely lock them down in some way, by the way, this just sprang to my mind, sorry to bring this up at the late hour, but it just sprang to my mind. I think solitary confinement is cruel and unusual punishment. And so that, you know, how do you imprison, and we're going to get into prison reform and soon.
At some point,
I want to get
yeah.
to it soon because it's hot on my mind having done all this research.
Yeah, but, yeah.
So we'll have to do this in an upcoming episode. But there's so many factors that have to be resolved before I think I'd say I'm comfortable with capital punishment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
I think we're not quite in the same place, but pretty close.
Yeah,
pretty close. One last thought I have that I haven't been able to shoehorn in anywhere here. So I'm going to say at the end. Typically or stereotypically, I think it is fascinating. This issue divides conservatives and liberals in unusual ways.
Hmm.
A typical conservative is usually very distrustful of the state.
Uh huh.
But here with executions, they seem to trust the state really, really. I mean, just like whatever the state says, that's what is right and true and just. Liberals, on the other hand, usually are very willing to trust the state, and big government is a wonderful thing, but not with the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
They're very distrustful of the state. And so I think this is an interesting interplay,
yeah.
an interesting idea with liberals and conservatives.
I think that what you just said
yeah.
speaks to the reality that people, their political thinking have deep presuppositions and
yes.
ideologies
yes. Yes.
that
yes.
they
yes.
may not even be aware of.
I think that's right.
And so the question is, I think, like, you look at a conservative who doesn't like big government but loves the death penalty, for example.
Yeah.
I'd say probably what they're thinking about more than their trust or distrust of the state is what they think government is for.
Mm-hmm.
What
That's
is it
right.
for?
That's right. That's right.
And
That's
if,
good.
And if government is for protecting the shores and punishing evildoers,
yeah.
and then of course they're big on those issues,
sure.
and they're small on the social issues.
Yeah.
But a liberal is saying, "What's government for? If it's for fixing all our social problems and for helping people who need help, and
yeah.
And who cares about big defense contracts? And we definitely don't want to be, you know, putting people to death." They should have a different ideology of what the government is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, a really helpful way of putting it. I think that's
yeah.
very insightful. It's not about whether you're for the government or against the government or for big government or small government. It really is about what is the purpose
yeah.
of government.
What's their role?
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, hey, man, this has been a great discussion.
Yep.
And I'm glad. Let's do something funny now. We gotta lighten the mood.
Okay, sounds good.
This is heavy. This is heavy stuff.
Before my conversation with Dave, I had the opportunity to sit down with an attorney friend of mine who is passionate about the death penalty. Her name is Amanda, and she'll be talking mostly about the death penalty in Kentucky because that's where we live and that's where she works. But I think you'll find it helpful even if you're not blessed or cursed to live in Kentucky. All right, let's roll that interview and enjoy.
My dad is a police officer.
Okay.
So I think when I was young, I probably thought more about crime than the average person, just kind of in context of wondering what it was that my dad did when he went to work every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What does it mean catching bad guys?
Right. You know, I would spend some time down at the police station, not very much, but you know, like mom was a teacher. So if we weren't at school for some reason, we tended to be with dad, you know, like if we were sick or just couldn't be at school for any reason. And so I'd spend time down at the police department and I would just like, it started with being very concerned about police use of lethal force.
Okay.
And then it started to transition into capital punishment. And so from elementary school, I would say, I would have to ask my dad, but I would say that I was having conversations with him about capital punishment probably.
Okay.
And that may have been too. There could be several factors. I have no idea necessarily why, but one of the executions that happened in Kentucky when the death penalty was reinstated was when I was in elementary school. Mm-hmm. So part of me wonders now as an adult seeing that date, wondering, was I hearing about things on the news? Were things, you know, but I remember being very concerned about it as a kid. And so I would say that I have always been anti-capital punishment.
Yeah.
But it really just kicked into high gear in high school and beyond. And I'll tell you, one of the really contributing factors to that was being at church camp when I was younger in high school and meeting and hearing and learning and studying about Shane Claiborne.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really pivotal moment for me in social justice and social rights issues. And that was I think my friends in high school would tell you that was a very kind of like defining moment for me and switching a lot of things that I really like cared about and thought about.
Yeah.
But capital punishment, it's always been an issue that has been important to me. I took time to like study about it, to learn about it. It impacted what I studied in college, you know, and then eventually going to law school, kind of groups and organizations that I joined all were kind of impacted by that. So,
yeah. From your study and experience, what does it look like practically for a person who's experiencing the legal system and goes through and to the end of an execution or death row experience?
Sure. So in Kentucky anyways, which is mainly what I can speak about, the prosecutor, so a crime happens, we find a suspect, they're arrested. Initially, you don't know if capital punishment is going to be sought or not. Even if they can, they may not.
Sure.
The prosecutor has to file a notice of intent to seek the death penalty. Again, that can change at any point. You know, you might have a plea deal and death penalty be off the table, but you have to file the notice of intent to seek the death penalty. And then you just kind of go through the criminal process of getting to a trial. So at the trial with capital punishment, you can't, as horrific as it is to end someone's life, it's not just murder. There has to be an aggravating circumstance. So there has to be murder plus something else.
Okay.
So murder plus robbery, murder plus kidnapping, murder of a law enforcement officer, murder, you know, a rape. There has to be something else other than just the murder.
Yeah.
State has to prove their case. We have a bifurcated system. So you have the trial separate from the sentencing.
Right.
Then you go to the sentencing. And so the person's guilty, and then it's up to the jury to determine the sentence. You have to be allowed to present mitigating evidence. So show all of the reasons why, even though the person may have done it, they shouldn't be sentenced to death. Mm. The childhood they've had, the experiences that they've had, the circumstances that led to the homicide. Then at that point, once they're sentenced, if they are sentenced to death, they go to death row, and we do in Kentucky what we call a direct appeal. It's your first appeal as a matter of right. Everyone that's convicted of a felony gets the mandatory appeal that's successful or not.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it becomes more discretionary. So most of these folks are represented by the public defender's office. So appeals, whether capital or not, become a little bit more discretionary. At that point, they have to look at the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
that there is, what issues. So at the direct appeal, you're limited to objections at the trial. So you go through and you pull out all of those objections and you find the ones that we want to argue, like, you should reverse this conviction because of one of these objections that we made.
I see. Uh-huh.
When you go further on, you can bring up issues like ineffective assistance of counsel or newly discovered evidence. So you start to do all of those appeals. There are state appeals. Then you can do federal appeals. We've obviously seen cases go to the Supreme Court. And at some point, if you get to the end of those appeals, is when you're looking at a person who may be executed.
Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of administrative procedures where the state will set a date. They have the right to kind of seek clemency from the governor, all of those things. And then a date is set if no, you know, appeals for clemency are successful. If it's going to proceed, then it gets scheduled and proceeds.
Yeah.
So,
How long would it typically take from someone who has been sentenced to death to when they would actually be put to death?
Right. That absolutely varies state by state.
Sure, of course.
Like in Texas, they seem to get there a lot sooner than in places like Kentucky. The death penalty in 1972 was, for all intents and purposes, ended in the United States and the Supreme Court in a case called Furman versus Georgia. They didn't find that it was necessarily cruel and unusual punishment to have the death penalty, but the way the death penalty was being administered.
Yeah.
Or not even administered in the moment of death, but like how you got to the sentence of death.
I see, yeah.
You know, there were factors we weren't considering, evidence we weren't considering. It was very done on a very discriminatory basis. And so they said, if you're going to keep doing it this way, you can't do it. So a lot of states went back to the drawing board, you know, looked at different things, kind of came up with some better policies and procedures. And then the death penalty, Gregg versus Georgia in 1976, the Supreme Court said, okay, it was a certain state that petitioned that, but they essentially allowed it again if you did certain things.
Right, right, right. With the better policies.
With the better policies, yes.
Yep.
So since that time in Kentucky, we have only executed 3 people.
Okay.
And one of those, the last one, I mean, I think it was in like 2008, maybe. It was quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. He was a volunteer, so he had to do his direct appeal. He didn't have the option. He fought it, but ultimately they had to do that direct appeal. And then he said, I don't want to do anymore. You made me do this one. I don't want to do anymore. Just set my death date. So he didn't even go through the whole legal process.
He wanted to be put to death.
He wanted to be put to death.
Yeah.
The other ones actually got to kind of the end of that the whole process. So if you think about all of the people sitting on death row in Kentucky right now, many of them have been sitting on death row for decades.
Wow.
And we're still
in that appeal process.
In that, you know, process.
So it can be decades.
Decades, yes.
Yeah. What does death row look like for an inmate?
Yeah. So to the best of my knowledge, it has probably been really decades since I've heard or seen or know what it is like. But they have a special housing unit. They are in Eddyville, Kentucky at the Kentucky State Penitentiary. They used to kind of be in general population, and I think something happened and they kind of pulled back on that. Mm-hmm. And so now they have their own housing unit. They are each in a cell by themselves, so they don't have any...
No roommates.
They're housed in a cell by themselves in a special housing unit and just kind of do day-to-day.
But otherwise, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, so they don't mingle with general population in Eddyville, or they didn't when I was there. Anyways.
Sure.
But
and I'm sure that varies by state or maybe by penitentiary.
Sure.
Yeah.
But housing is usually separate. There's usually just different things to consider, which is one when we look at the cost. One of the things that most people, I should say, don't believe that it's actually more expensive to do death penalty than life in prison.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those factors are the way that they're housed separately and those just different considerations that...
Okay, so which is more expensive, life in prison or utilizing a death penalty?
The death penalty.
Is more expensive.
Is more expensive.
Yeah.
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 Generally by far, yes.
And you're saying that's in part because they have to be housed so differently and more expensively. It's more expensive to house someone who is on death row.
Right. So they have their own special housing unit. They're in their cells by themselves. Like, they don't have roommates.
Yep.
It's just a lot different.
Right. And then the appeals, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
You're talking about an enormous amount of money going into paying state attorneys to work through all those appeal mm-hmm. after appeal after appeal, which would not, that time would not be there if right. there weren't appeals going on.
Correct. And even the way the trial is done and the way the
yeah,
trial
sure,
has to
sure,
be done
sure.
separately is just more expensive. And then you're storing all the evidence and keeping all the evidence that you have to save and keep
oh, yeah.
during all of
yeah,
those
yeah, yeah.
appeals. You know,
that, which you wouldn't have to keep all that if it was just... kind of, you're done with your appeals, you're just going to stay forever in prison.
Generally speaking, yes. I mean, I would say that there's probably differences county by county or police departments, how they do that. But
okay.
I think generally you're saving a lot of the evidence in those cases that are going to be, you know,
yeah,
more appealable.
Yeah, that's really helpful. That's yeah. really helpful.
One of the first times I went to death row was very interesting circumstances. So
okay.
I was involved with a group called Kentucky Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And so they had some nuns and a priest that would go down and do mass on death row.
Yeah.
I thought, well, this is an issue that's really, that I'm kind of passionate about. And so I volunteered to drive and to take some of these ladies down to Eddyville to death row. And so we're doing mass on death row. It was my first mass too, which was also interesting. But I don't know what I thought was going to happen when I went into a room full of people convicted to die, but I would say it was probably nothing like I expected. You know, everyone was like kind and polite and generous, and I'm not sure that I really felt it was more intimidating for me going into the prison and walking through the yard
yeah.
to get to the spot where we're doing the mass than it was sitting in this room of people who are supposed to be the worst of the worst convicted to die.
Right, right.
You know, and like, I don't know that at any point I felt like unsafe or unsure. Whereas like when you're kind of walking through the yard and there's like hundreds of people just
right.
like milling about
yeah,
and a handful
yeah, yeah.
of guard, you know, and like, I think we maybe had like one guard in the room with us. And I was like, well, the odds aren't great if something happens. But, you know, like like they were thankful that you're there. They wanted to talk and find out about your life. It wasn't weird or awkward or I didn't feel.
Yeah.
It was just a very good experience. But for me, of course, I was already opposed to the death penalty, but meeting these people,
yeah,
shaking their hands, seeing their faces, it really did put a whole different light on things. And I think that is one thing, too. The death penalty in the United States is so sterilized. They have these trials. We don't really know who these people are. They get convicted to death. And it's just this issue that people have in their mind.
Yeah.
It's the death penalty. It's not a person. It's
right.
the death penalty. So to sit in front of a person and see their face and to say, like, the world wants you to die.
Yeah.
Like, that is what they want. Like,
right.
it was very interesting to put a face to the issue as opposed to just
yeah.
having
yeah.
it be
yeah.
kind of this amorphous issue, you
right?
know?
Yeah, because you think of those people just with their crimes. They say, "Here's right. a person who's on death row because you know he broke into a store and attacked this woman and raped her and killed mm-hmm. her and whatever and stole a bunch of stuff. We want that person to die. Yeah, we want some justice here.
Right.
But then when you meet him and like, okay, there may be other circumstances, or when you meet him, he's a nice guy,
right?
Or that's
he's
a different thing.
More than the worst thing he's ever done.
More than yeah, he's more than just the worst thing he's ever done.
Yeah.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that when you went to death row, it wasn't like Silence of the Lambs,
no.
where you walk in and it's all these like actual monsters that you're absolutely terrified of.
No, not at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Not minimizing, and I think that that's the thing when you advocate against the death penalty, people think you're like advocating for what they did.
Yeah. Sure.
What they did was absolutely horrific.
Yes.
Sometimes, like, I can't even put words to, like, some of the experiences that these families have had. Like, it's horrific.
Yes, yes.
But I'm, like, advocating that this person not die, for me anyways, is not saying that what they did was okay or that I'm, you know, that I don't take that seriously.
Yeah.
It's just advocating for that person not to die, you know?
Right.
I think punishment is important. Accountability is important.
Yeah.
I just don't think that death is the solution, but
okay. And why not?
So many reasons, you know, starting off with just the financial aspect and the burden that the state carries for this.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, we've spoken a little bit before about deterrence. It's not, I shouldn't say it's not a deterrent. You know, there's two different kinds of deterrence, general and specific. Obviously, if we execute that person, it's a deterrent to that person ever committing a crime again.
Well, of course, yes.
You know, so it's a very specific deterrent, but I don't think it's a general deterrent. I don't think it's useful. I do think it's barbaric when we look at other places that institute the death penalty and still have the death penalty and utilize the death penalty. We put ourselves in a unique cohort of countries.
Yeah.
You know, that otherwise we would probably not want to be lumped together with.
Sure.
So I think it's a little barbaric. I cannot speak as a victim's family member. I have heard a lot of victims' family members speak. There are a lot of victims' families that do want this very specific course of justice.
Yes.
I think a lot of families are also very burdened by it because, I mean, I don't think there's any moving past what happens to a family member when they die in this way, but, you know, it gets brought up so much more often.
Yeah.
When you're going, you know, you have an appeal here, you have an appeal there, you have a death date. Oh, wait, yep. It has to get reset. You know, like,
yes.
There's, I just feel like you're drug on so much longer through the litigation process. Like, it's just almost never ending.
Yeah. So that's not only for the criminal, but also for the family of their victims.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that some families don't object to, I think they would object to it happening, but they don't think it's a reason to not have the death penalty. But I think for a lot of families, it is a difficult experience to have to continue to go through over and over and over again.
Yes, yes. If they're following it, yeah.
Sure. I don't think there is a good reason to execute someone, especially among the problems that we've had with the death penalty and convictions in general in the United States.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What are some of the problems that we've had with the death penalty in the way that we've used it in the United States?
Sure. So a problem, concern that I have that is not shared with everyone is the nature in which people are executed. We have had many methods of execution in the United States that have been legal.
Yep.
And I think they're all still currently legal, at least in one state or another. So we have had firing squad, hanging, lethal injection, gas chamber, you know, but they're all still legal, at least in one state or another.
Okay.
So in Kentucky, for example, we have like a backup method of execution. It's lethal injection is the primary method of execution.
Yeah.
But we have the electric chair as a backup for people sentenced. It's either 1996 or 1998. People sentenced up to a certain date get to choose which method they would like.
Oh, okay.
And then a lot of states have, like, I think it's Delaware that maybe still has hanging that's permitted. You know, Utah still has firing squad, gas chamber still in several states. So it's not the primary method, but it's still technically permissible. And most states did that for, like, if, you know, for some reason, if lethal injection is overturned or whatnot.
They still have the electric chair, you're saying?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like the electric chair. So they have a death house in Kentucky that has the lethal injection equipment and all of that. But the electric chair is actually in the primary building. And like when I went on a tour of the building once, they actually took us to the electric chair and like permitted us to sit in the electric chair, which was an interesting experience.
Did you do that?
I did.
Yeah.
It was bizarre, but so I just think the way we've had problems with all of those methods of execution, which is why we went to lethal injection thinking it's easier, it's like more, just kind of a more sterile medical thing, you know, you don't have an issue of like, I think in the gas chamber, there was once an issue of someone like seizing and then like banging his head against a metal pole and like just different things happening with different methods of execution.
Sure, or, there have been some terrible stories.
Horrible stories, yes. The electric chair, you think it's probably fairly successful every time. But then if you don't get like that water salt solution just right, or if the person, you're dealing with electricity. So it could just end a lot of bad ways. I don't want to get too graphic, you know, but so a lot of people don't care if it's barbaric or not because they think, well, they've done something terrible. We don't care if it's, you know, but that was always an issue. We've had those issues. And so even we now have issues with lethal injection. And so Kentucky, a case went to the Supreme Court, Bays v. Reese, a case out of Kentucky challenging lethal injection.
Okay.
And so there was a moratorium on the death penalty US-wide for like years while that case was being litigated.
Mm.
Not a ton changed after that, I don't think, but I was in law school during that period of time. There have been problems with lethal injection, like maybe the paralytic might paralyze them so you don't see the pain, but then one of the certain drugs isn't working right, so their body's experiencing just agony while it's happening. Now we have an issue of most of the people who produce the drug have stopped producing the drug because of what it's being used for, the kind of like the three drug cocktail that they use for lethal injection. So they have to get it from compounded pharmacies. We've had issues of, I think Alabama had an issue of, we have some of the drug left, but it's expired. Can we use it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a lot of things to consider with that. But we also have the issue of, a lot of people have been exonerated from death row.
Yeah.
And for me, interestingly enough, if we want to talk about positive outcomes, I think that that is maybe one of the positive outcomes I've seen from the death penalty. I still think it's terrible, but I think that seeing all of these people exonerated from death row, because of the people on death row, their cases get more scrutiny because we're looking to end their lives.
Interesting, yeah.
And so, you know, we have now found all of these innocent people on death row, and I think that it has drawn more attention to, well, if there's innocent people on death row, there's probably a lot more innocent people in prison also, serving life sentences, you know, whatever. And so I think it has drawn more attention to the issue of wrongful convictions in the United States. Our reliability on certain types of evidence, like eyewitness testimony, which you think someone saw it, right?
Right, right. No, but that's, I know that eyewitness testimony is often very, very poor.
Yes, it's one of the most least reliable.
And yet juries think that it is the most reliable.
Right, because you saw it, right? You said you saw it. You had to have seen
it. Yeah.
You know, but our mind, boy, it's tricky.
It really
is. Our mind is really tricky.
Yes, that's right.
You know, and just evidence in general, if you think of like bite mark evidence or handwriting evidence, and like when you start looking into a lot of it, thinking, how much of a science is it really?
Right, right. And and shows like CSI or Law and Order, those kind of shows make things just so much worse, because those shows, you know, there's magical evidence, not magical, but you know, the evidence is just so overwhelming. And like, oh yeah, this is an open and shut thing, the way they present it. But
machine, it's going to tell us.
It's going to tell us exactly.
It's going to be 100%, and it's going to be wrapped up, clean, done in an hour, you know?
But my understanding, you're the lawyer, I'm not, but my understanding is that in real life, evidence just is not that overwhelming usually to one side or another. It can be difficult to really make these decisions.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, how much circumstantial evidence and plays into it. And is there really like that much like biological evidence in a case, or scientific advancements have been fascinating, and we have come so far with scientific developments. But I think a lot of what we rely on that we feel like is science still leaves a lot of room for interpretation and differences of interpretation and discussion. It's not like matching strands of DNA, which I feel like is fairly reliable now. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but
I
feel like
that's
fairly reliable now. I mean, you still have issues of contamination, and I mean, we've had a lot of issues too of like corruption in crime labs. And a lot of time your crime lab is not an independent lab. It's part of the state police agency.
Yeah.
And so there will be corruption in crime labs for just different reasons, you know, or you think, oh, well, this is the person, they know it's this person, and you do things in a way that it shouldn't be done. And I'm fairly certain it was Oklahoma where they had a real problem with some of the, were the main crime lab in the state. And so, you know, I just think we're looking at a decision that we can't undo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants a person to spend 20 years of their life in prison if they're innocent.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
But ultimately it's somewhat fixable, right? We can't give you your 20 years back, but we're not killing you, you know?
Right. Well, and it's still a life. And so there's, you've got limited freedom, but theoretically in prisons, you know, different prisons are different, but there are all kinds of ways you can learn and grow as a human being. You can flourish, you can do all kinds of things there, that when you cut someone's life off, it's
done.
It's done. It's over.
Yeah. Well, there's no undo button for that. And I just, there are so many problems, so many room for error with all of the human involvement.
Did you ever watch the show Dexter?
A little bit. I don't think I ever finished the series.
A little bit. So of course he was a lab person, a blood spatter specialist. And he's a serial killer.
Right.
And he is all, it's exactly what you're talking about in a fictionalized Hollywood, you know, sort of way. But he's changing the evidence to fit, to tell the narrative he wants told in the courtroom every episode. That's how he does it. And it's really easy to do.
It is. I think, I mean, what area of our life can we think of where that's not the case, where it's easy to let our own feelings or thoughts or kind of what we want to happen impact what we're doing and the choices that we're making and how we're doing stuff.
Yes. I'll say it's easy to do. It's easy to change little things. Mm-hmm. I suppose if the evidence is really overwhelming one way or another, it's hard to, it's harder to do that when you have tons and tons of stuff. But a little piece here and there, to rely on just one piece of evidence that is the clinch of the whole thing.
Right.
You know, well, there's one hair found there and that's it. We're going to send someone off to die because of that one hair.
Right.
you know, that's easy to fake. If the evidence is overwhelming, that might be different.
Right.
Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and the same though is true in regards to those little perceptions and feelings that we have too with our juries. And that's one of the reasons the death penalty was outlawed, I guess, if you will, in the 70s, because of the way, you know, we as humans still have all these certain thoughts and feelings about things and people as well.
Right, right.
And so the way choices were being made, you know, like a person was more likely to get the death penalty if the victim, and this is still the case, if the victim is white, less likely to get the death, you know. And so I forget the exact numbers of percentages of victims who are white and black, but it's overwhelming just about that your victim pretty much has to be white in order for you to get the death penalty in the United States.
Right. If the victim is black or brown, then the chances of you getting the death penalty are almost non-existent.
Yeah, it's pretty slim.
Yeah.
And so we still have some of that. And so, you know, kind of the way that humans are making the choices along the way.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
I just think leave a lot to be desired when we are ending a life.
Right, right. What do most people misunderstand about the legal system?
So the average person who's not in court.
Okay.
Feels like there is just so much that is absolute and certain. I don't think that they see or know or are willing to admit that like these mistakes really happen or can happen. You know, I can't, you know, how many times people say, well, that person was arrested. If there wasn't enough evidence, they wouldn't have been arrested.
Right.
So not accurate.
Totally.
Right. We all know that, you know? And so I think that their minds are not open to how much room for error there is.
Yes.
And that they feel like police officers or judges or whomever who work really hard, like that they make the right decisions.
Yeah.
Or juries make the right decisions, or they heard the evidence, so it must be right, you know.
Whatever happens in the legal system, if people are doing their best, then they get the right answer every time.
Correct. Yes, yes. Very well put. Yes.
Not everyone is doing their best, mm-hmm. although I think the people that I know are, you know, people are, mm-hmm. they're doing their best. And, but sometimes, you know what? I work in healthcare, and I'll tell you the same thing happens in healthcare. People who are doing, doctors and nurses and others who are doing their very best, sometimes make mistakes and sometimes get it wrong. And it doesn't make them evil or bad, but it affects people's lives in the same way the legal system does, in really traumatic and terrible ways.
Right.
Even people who are doing their best.
Right. Right. Or like a surgeon, we think like, well, they're so trained, they're so skilled, like they're going to get it right every time, right?
Right. And they're not. They're not.
They're not.
Even someone, now there are some horrific stories about surgeons who take shortcuts and don't care about people and very clearly those are very few and far between. And I would say the same thing, I would guess, I don't know, but the same kind of thing about judges and lawyers and that whole system, that there are people who are nefarious, but probably not many.
Yeah.
It's people who are trying to do it right, but it's really hard.
Right. Right.
Is that right?
And it just takes one bad, you know, in one case, if you have 98% of the people doing their best and doing the work.
Yeah.
But then you have like 2% who is, I mean, it can change everything.
It can.
It can change everything.
Right. Okay. So actually, this is my last question, I think. The kind of work that you mostly do, which we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
Working in family law. There's a lot of analogy, and I'm really curious to hear what you, where you see those parallels between criminal law, or maybe especially the capital punishment, and the kind of work that you do on a regular basis in family law.
When I was young, younger, college or whatever, you know, and you're more like spirited about things and excited about things, I used to get so angry because I would think like, man, we advocate for children, right?
Yeah.
Like we advocate for children who are in hard circumstances. You know, a lot of people in religious communities obviously advocate for children to be born, you know, who are pro-life. And so we advocate for children. We want children to be safe. We want children to get help when they're in bad situations. And I would see these people, men and women, primarily men on death row, and you hear about their lives.
Yeah.
And what has happened to them? And I think those are these children.
Mm.
Like those are these children. How many chances did we have to intervene and we didn't? How many chances did we have to get them help and we didn't?
Yeah.
I remember hearing stories about somebody who was like, used to get locked in a closet regularly, eating dog food to survive, take away what he has done. as an adult, if that child came to us, you know, we would advocate so hard for them to get help, to get resources. We would understand if they were making maybe some poor choices at the time. But yeah, I just see these people and you hear about their lives. You hear the mitigating evidence.
Yes, yes.
What their lives were like as children. And I'm like, these are the children we think we fight so hard for. You know?
Right.
And how many chances did we have to intervene?
Yes.
When they were kids?
Yes.
Or maybe didn't or couldn't, or you know, we weren't looking enough when they needed help. I wish I could remember. If I thought about it, I would have looked it up before today. I watched the movie about, the man who started the Equal Justice Initiative. It came out several years ago.
Oh, Brian Johnson.
Yes.
Just Mercy.
Just
Mercy, yep.
And I remember the man saying, like, people have cared about me more like in the last week of my life than they ever did in the first 18 years.
Wow.
You know, or something along those lines. And I just remember like the whole movie, I was fine, you know, because I know like the stories that they're telling were not unfamiliar to me. So it's very hard to kind of trigger that like emotional aspect of it. But I just lost it in tears thinking like that is what I see in a lot of these cases. Like these children that I work with now or these families that I work with now, like so many of their stories are so parallel to the adults that I've seen on death row thinking like how can we intervene? How can we improve outcomes for them?
Yes.
And the choices that they make.
Yes.
And so I feel like it's the same work in a different courtroom. You know, like how do we not get to the point that we are with these men? But that I'm, you know, working with the same, you know, I'm seeing the same stories and the same types of people and hope and pray that these kids and these parents and these lives that I see are different. So I see the parallels a lot in the two fields.
Oh, yeah. That makes perfect sense to me.
Not necessarily in the law, but in their lives.
In their lives, sure.
So it's been interesting.
Well, the kids that you're working with are on a trajectory that some of them, probably not all of them, are going to, if no intervention happens, they're on a trajectory to do things that will land them on death row. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's going to be, in some sense, too late. And how can we bend the trajectory of their life in a positive direction?
Even children
I get that completely.
Yeah, who even children who are victims, who are have not made poor choices, who are not, you know, teens in the justice, like, trauma, right? Like,
oh yeah, oh, that's
another
what I'm
podcast
about.
Idea, right? Yeah. ACEs. I would love to hear a podcast on ACEs and adverse childhood experiences. But we know how that impacts, you know, our minds, our bodies, our health.
Yeah,
it's you know, so many people in the medical field now are saying that's the biggest public health crisis in the United States at this time is adverse childhood experiences. So, you know, so I think just the ability to impact these lives now, just something I don't take for granted. So
that's fantastic.
In preparation for coming here, I was looking at some studies and I even think the majority of voting age adults in the Kentucky oppose the death penalty at this point.
Yeah.
So I think we're there. We're just not executing as many people as we used to. So I don't think it's in the forefront of our minds to like abolish the death penalty.
Interesting.
It's really fallen out of favor in most places.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Amanda.
Yes. Thank you.
Dave, you asked for something light, and I have something a little bit lighter. Well, almost anything is lighter than what we've been talking about.
Executing people.
But I wanted to talk about animals who have been arrested for crimes.
Seriously?
There have been...
They arrest animals.
There are...
Police officers.
Police officers.
Or like game wardens.
Literally, police officers. Okay, for example.
Okay.
In 2010, Colombian police officers were having trouble...
Colombian police,
right?
Yeah, okay. Keep going.
Yeah, okay. They were having trouble with infiltrating a lot of the drug cartels that they have there, that kind of thing. They made a huge break in the case there with a really big discovery. The cartel was using a particular parrot named Lorenzo...
Yeah.
A parrot. He had been trained to be a lookout to alert the cartel to police raids. And when they figured that out, they arrested Lorenzo. Okay. And then when they realized that's what was happening, since then, the Colombian police have arrested about 1,700 lookout birds.
Wow.
In various parts of the Colombian cartels. Apparently, this was like a really big thing.
Yeah.
They're training and using. I'm sure that in an organization like that, they even had like a manual. I'm guessing a little bit here, but they had a manual for how to train, parrots to be lookout birds.
Okay, this is what I want from you right now.
Okay, come on.
I want you to give me your impression of a lookout parrot. warning the Colombian cartel about the encroaching police. All right, go.
Okay.
Complete with a squawk.
With a squawk. Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? The Three Amigos. Up here. Look up here. Look up here. Squawk. 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 Here comes a popo. Here comes a popo. 1,700 birds.
Wow.
That they have arrested now.
Okay.
What do they do with these birds? I don't know.
I don't know. Sell them?
I guess. We put them in better homes or something. There was a goat in Janakpur, which is in Nepal, that kept eating flowers from the district magistrate's garden.
Oh, boy.
And after several warnings, the goat and the owner were put... The goat and the owner were put in prison overnight. Uh-huh. They were released on bond with a warning of serious consequences if it happens again.
Yeah.
Apparently, they learned their lesson, and they, you know, things have been better since then.
Right.
But the goat and the person were put in prison together.
Okay. Well, they kept each other company. I can understand that to a degree. I mean, the owners being irresponsible and they need to be responsible. But the goat going in prison? I guess, if you leave the goat out and the person's in prison, they're just going to eat whatever they want.
They're going to find those flowers.
Lock them down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay, so here's another one. The Russian police captured a cat, a house cat, mm-hmm. sitting on top of the wall that guards a prison near the city of, I'm going to butcher this name, Skaitovkar?
Wow.
In the Komi province. The cat was sitting on top of this prison wall and had a cell phone and phone charger taped to its belly.
Oh, it was a gopher cat.
Apparently it was. And so somebody was trying to sneak that stuff in.
Here, kitty.
right. Yeah. I don't know what they did. I don't know if they arrested the cat, but that's obviously a cat involved in a crime.
Well, they stopped that cat.
They stopped it.
Arrested that cat.
They arrested in that sense. Yeah, yes. No doubt about it. Okay, here's another one. Police in the Mexican state of Chiapas arrested a donkey who bit one man and kicked another. They held the donkey in a jail cell that is usually used to hold people arrested for public drunkenness, the drunk tank.
Sure.
Until the donkey's owner, Mauro Gutierrez, paid the equivalent of $420 for the medical bills for the victims here. They recently also arrested a bull and a dog for similar reasons. They're just arresting animals all over the place down there.
Yeah, well, you know, if you get kicked or bit by a donkey or equestrian or gored with a bull or bit by a dog, I mean, they can be serious, right?
Oh, yeah.
And hey, if you've been warned especially and you... then you allow your animal to go nuts. It's on you, man.
Makes sense. But can you imagine being in jail in a drunk tank or something, and the person in the next cell to you is a donkey?
Right. Oh, the jokes. The dad jokes are abounding right now.
Come on.
I mean, you know, like the things about jackasses and stuff. But I was just thinking, like, the prison had some interesting tacos the next day.
Oh, boy. You're saying donkey tacos?
Donkey tacos.
Donkey meat tacos?
Yeah.
Why is it? I've heard of horse meat and other kinds of meat. I've never heard of donkey meat.
Well.
I wonder if donkey meat is any good.
Well, we could try it.
Yeah. I don't know any donkeys, though. Well, actually, I probably don't want to know the donkey that I'm eating, but.
Cut off a portion of your finger there and we'll give it a try.
All right, let me tell you another one.
Yeah.
Mookie is the name of a capuchin monkey who...
I like this already.
Yeah, Mookie.
Mookie the capuchin monkey.
Yep. He lives in Florida.
Of course he does.
Yeah, in Florida. Okay.
Florida man has a capuchin monkey.
Florida monkey.
Yeah. Florida monkey.
Florida monkey.
Gets arrested.
He lives in Florida with his owner. They enjoy often going out together in public. Mookie is calm and he enjoys people. He's an unusual monkey in that way.
Right.
But a stranger came up to Mookie.
He throws feces.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. A stranger came up to Mookie and started petting him, and he doesn't like to be touched. He likes people, but he doesn't like to be touched. And so the owner said that, please stop petting him. He's easily startled. He doesn't like people touching him. But this stranger continued to do that. Well, Mookie was startled by a passing truck and bit the stranger. Mookie had never been aggressive before, but police ordered Mookie into detainment for 30 days to prove that he didn't have rabies.
I was gonna say, it's rabies. I related a bit.
Despite no signs of rabies whatsoever, yeah. And they were out in public all the time. Mookie has been registered, had been registered for years with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, but he was ordered to be detained for 30
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I get this one. I mean, dogs have rabies shots. I don't know of any monkey shots for rabies, right? And if there were, they're probably like super expensive like they are for people.
Yeah.
And so to spare this person the multi-thousand dollar expense of rabies shots that are probably hard on your body and system,
yeah.
Yeah, put the monkey in for 30 days and see if they go nuts.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, one of the things that the owner was upset about, among many things, but was that Mookie missed his 20th birthday party.
Oh, man.
Which was going to be on the beach. Apparently, they had the party, is my understanding, but Mookie couldn't come because he was in jail.
He was in jail. Mookie was in jail. Well, I mean, it's unfortunate that the stranger didn't listen.
Yeah, indeed.
Right? I mean,
indeed.
That's frustrating.
That is frustrating.
Right?
But, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to have a monkey?
No.
When I was little, of course, I wanted to have
right.
a monkey.
Yeah. It sounds great.
It sounds great.
You're dealing with diapers and poop. And,
yes.
And I've seen what monkeys do to themselves also.
Yes.
They do that a lot.
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah. I think I've told the story, but there was a monkey doing that when I was taking the boys when they were little.
Uh-huh.
He was up there right in front of us having a good time. And the boys said... They were really, really toddlers.
Yeah.
What is that monkey doing?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know. Let's go. Let's go look at this monkey. It was like, the most bizarre behavior they'd seen.
Right, 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 right.
This is very unusual. What is a monkey doing?
Right.
Nothing. Yeah. Let's go. Let's leave.
Yes, yes, yes. When I was young, I also wanted to get sea monkeys. And I mean, I was just enamored with the sea monkeys.
The pictures of them, like, making a little civilization.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Oh, my word.
What a jilting that was.
I went over to my friend's house one time, and he said that he had gotten sea monkeys. I was so excited. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
I was not really friends with this kid.
Yeah.
But he's like, I got sea monkeys. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
I would love to come over
now.
To your house. We're friends now. I went over there, and it's just, there's nothing. There's nothing.
Yeah, they're like shrimp. Yeah,
I think they're tiny little shrimp.
We had those, and my sister had them, and I remember them moving slightly.
Yeah.
like very slowly, and you couldn't, they're so small, you couldn't quite make out what they were, which is why I guess they could pass them off as monkeys, but what a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah. Sea monkeys.
Where's all the civilization they're building?
Right. Yeah.
No, they're just,
we were
floating.
So deceived, I don't think you can do that. Nobody can sell sea monkeys these days.
Really?
I don't think so.
Huh. Well, I mean, you had a collection of pet rocks.
Yeah, pet rocks. We had pet rocks. Did you really?
Did you buy rocks?
I didn't buy them.
No, we did
but
not.
But I
have...
heard about pet rocks, and I was like, that's the dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah.
But I'll make my own pet rocks, and I would just find a rock that was interesting and bring it inside. It was more geologic, I think, or just like, what is
find
the whole
a...
thing
yeah.
about a pet rock?
Did you have a rocks polisher?
No, but I wanted one.
Yeah, they were pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, that's a real thing. That's, that's actually pretty cool. But what I mean is that kids these days, don't understand the disappointment. Because, if you were going to try and sell sea monkeys these days, you'd have to do it online. And there would be 100 million TikTok videos. They're like, no, don't buy sea monkeys. They're dumb. But we couldn't. Hmm. When you and I were growing up, they didn't have that.
Hmm. I might have to test this theory.
You're going
to
try and sell?
I might sell some sea monkeys.
Sell some sea monkeys?
Or some more pet rocks.
More pet rocks?
Something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. Let me tell you about one more.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one.
There's lots of animals getting arrested. Okay. Last one I've got for us. There was a goat that was arrested in Nigeria in 2009 for taking part in an armed robbery of a car.
Okay.
Several men were seen attempting to rob a car. And while the rest were apprehended, one of the men escaped and ran down an alley. When police made it to the alley, all they found in the alley was a goat.
Mm.
And what they deduced was that the unknown man had magically turned into a goat.
That is some powerful deduction.
Yes.
Some serious, serious tools.
Yes,
that's
right.
Going on there.
That's right.
In those cages.
And so that they thought that that goat was part of the robbery. They couldn't see a way of how someone could go into this alleyway
and then get out
and get out
magically.
But there was a goat there.
There's a goat.
So
This dude turned into a goat. He's a shapeshifter.
And so
you got to lock him up.
That's it. So they arrested the goat. Eventually, the goat was sold at a police auction for about $2.
Wow. When they decided that it was just a goat.
I think so.
Yeah, because you can't sell people like that.
No, you can't sell people like that.
Not anymore.
When they realized that, I don't know. I can imagine that they tried to get the goat to turn back into a person or something like that. But when they realized it was just a goat, then they said, okay.
And how long did it take them, you said?
A good question. I don't know.
You said eventually it was
eventually.
Sold. Okay, eventually they figured this
out. They figured it out.
Way to go, police in Nigeria. Way to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Why I'm being really pedantic right now.
Yeah,
I should
indeed.
Stop.
There's some crazy police stories. Anyway, so there have been many animals that have been arrested for crimes. Those are just a few of them that I thought were amusing to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, you got a nasty animal out there, it should be arrested.
Indeed.
Lock them up.
Yep.
Shut them down.
Shut them down. You know, my dog Pete, I don't know if he should be arrested, but what he does with his anal glands is definitely a crime.
Wow. We're going there now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does he do what I call the butt wheel?
He absolutely does the butt wheel.
He like cruises around the carpet on his butt.
I don't know if you remember when the room that we're sitting in right now, when we put carpet in this room, my wife, you know, laid the carpet down in here, brand new carpet. It was really nice. And we didn't have the gate yet. And she said, we're going to have no shoes in this.
I'm looking around the upstairs carpet as you speak.
And, you know, it's going to be all, we're going to keep the dog out of, and sure enough, like that first day, he's up here doing a butt wheel,
he's
scraping
cruising.
His butt across the new carpet.
My anal glands need expressing. That's on exactly your new carpet.
It is.
Dogs, man.
It is horrible. It is horrible.
Yeah.
That smell is, it's a crime.
Stinky Pete.
It's a crime. Stinky Pete, indeed.
Yep. Well, you could sell him for $2.
Yeah.
He could become mystery meat in a taco in a Mexican prison.
Is that what you're going to do with your dogs?
No comment. Teaser, also called a puzzler.
Yes. Have you been thinking about this?
I have not. So I've been busy running my mouth talking to you. So I've not had.
Yes, hopefully.
Someone out there has had an opportunity to think about it.
Yep.
And but anyway, it's time for you to reveal the answer to the puzzle. I would like to solve it, and I almost don't want to hear it because I want to go home and think about it. But you know, that's not the way this is working today.
It's not the way it's working today.
So give
me the answer. So here it is. Okay, here's the strategy. When you meet today, here's what you got to do. There are 27 prisoners. You need to appoint one of the prisoners as the scorekeeper.
Okay.
And the other 26 prisoners are going to be transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to say that of the two switches, switch A is important, and switch B is a dummy switch. It doesn't matter what. That's up or down. B doesn't matter. The scorekeeper is going to keep tally of switch A, and nobody cares about switch B. Here's what's going to happen. Every time one of the 26 transmitters goes into the room, they need to switch A to the on position once and only once.
Uh-huh.
So if a transmitter goes in and sees switch A in the off position, he switches it to on.
Yeah.
And from then on, he only ever touches switch B,
okay,
which is the dummy switch. And so if he goes in and sees switch A in the on position and he hasn't touched switch A yet, he's got to leave it alone.
Yep.
And he's going to switch B.
Right.
Only when he goes in for the first time and sees switch A in the off position, he switches it on.
I got you.
Okay. So eventually, every transmitter is going to turn switch A to the on position once and only once, but never to the off position. So the only person who turns switch A off is the scorekeeper. And that person turns switch A off 26 times, and then all 27 people have been in the room.
Oh, you know what I was thinking?
What's that?
That they couldn't go more than once.
Oh, I said earlier on that they're going to go, you know, sometimes it may be three people in a row, three times in the same.
Gotcha. I missed that.
They're going to go many times.
Yeah, okay.
They're going to go many times.
As many times, it's just at some point.
At some point.
They'll know that everyone's been.
Yeah. And I don't know another way. That's the only way that I know to figure that out. Uh-huh. But you can see, and it may take a long time. It's hard to say with 27 people.
Right.
It may take a while. But yeah, then you can figure it out.
Yep.
And then you don't have to be fed to the crocodiles.
I think you said alligators.
Alligators and crocodiles, whatever. whatever the bad thing happens. That's a terrible way to say it, because that's the death penalty, isn't it?
Yeah. Here we are,
you know what?
Being flippant about something so serious.
Indeed. But in terms of methods, that's like maybe the worst method.
Gosh.
No, there could be worse methods. That's worse than any of the methods that we've talked about so far.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, all right. Maybe we'll do another puzzler next time.
Okay, thanks, man. Holy cow, you made it to the end of another episode of the Hopper Podcast,
where we talk about things that matter and things that don't.
And we certainly had both of those today. In our next episode, we're going to dive into another important topic, the relationship between Israel and the church.
Yeah, we're going to be exploring how Christians should navigate and treat the nation and people of Israel. That is a topic that really matters, especially now in light of the increased tensions. And we are ready to unpack it with our signature blend of seriousness and silliness.
But we want to hear from you first. We want to hear about your thoughts, your feelings, questions, comments, queries, anything about Israel and the church. Please send them our way.
Dive into the show notes for ways to contact us by email, voicemail, texting, or hit us up on Facebook. We accept messages delivered by carrier pigeons, too, as long as they've been briefed on the topic.
I do not accept packages or carrier pigeon notes. Sorry.
Okay.
Before we go, let's give a special shout out to Amanda Bragg for talking with Willie. That's a task in itself, right?
Yeah.
Well, she survived a conversation with you with skill. She's got it down pat. Maybe we should give her a medal or, I don't know, like a participation trophy or something. Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, thanks, Amanda. I'm going to let you be in charge of the participation trophy for her.
Okay, well, you take care of the birds.
I'll take care of the birds. Yeah, absolutely.
And on the pigeon poo on your car.